You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us in iTunes and like us on Facebook. Share this episode with friends. And be sure to support us on PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you. So please, $1 an episode at Patreon really helps us. It helps pay all the bills. And we're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. We have a very special episode for you today. It's going to be a lot of shit posting. IRL. To my right is Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
I am excited about tonight. This is quite the cast of deplorables we have.
We have a full boat of deplorables, a basket, if you will.
They are irredeemable in every sense of the word.
No shit. And then across from you is Tyler Weiss.
Still how many times? You are a bad hombre. You know that?
Yeah, you are.
You are
one bad hombre.
Yeah, one bad hombre.
I am sorry. Listen, Tyler, you are a Trump supporter.
I support all chaos. I don't know if I really support him, but I mean, as far as it's going, yeah, and just to see the look in people's eyes.
You support him in the way that Greg supports him, which is just because it is. It's just.
Can you imagine if it had been Jeb? This would have been the hardest season to do. Like, we'd have had a really hard time doing episodes because it would have been Jeb or Rubio or whoever. And because it's been Donald Trump, this has been the easiest thing to podcast every week.
Yeah.
To be engaged, to find it entertaining, to find it jaw-dropping.
There's always something going on.
Oh, you never know what he's going to do.
Just a tweet. He could tweet out.
He said something that I would have bet in my entire life I'd have never heard someone that was running for president say in a soundbite. You know, granted, it was, what, 9 years ago?
Which was grab them by the pussy?
Yeah, grab them by the pussy. I would have thought, never thought.
I will not accept election results. Was it that one?
And how can you not be, I mean, how can Hillary not be 50 points ahead? It's incredible.
Why aren't I 50 points ahead?
And he literally said that, you can do whatever you want when you're a big star. You can go right up to him and grab him by the pussy. They like it.
Now, a man familiar with that particular technique of picking up women, James Neese joins us. James, how are you?
I'm pretty great.
All right.
Grabbing them all by the pussy, bro.
James, you've replaced Maya, I think, as our most loved and hated guest.
Well, she's been on the show like 14 times, but if you count that she's been two genders, you got to cut it in half. So, like, I'm technically ahead.
All right. Well, we're off.
You can't. I'm just saying you can't do 14 things when you change your name and your gender. You got to separate it because otherwise it's just fucking cheating. And it's like, you know, either stick with one statistic or stop wedging thing to pad your numbers. This is what I'm saying. That's what Alex Jones would say. You know, besides fucking make the fucking frogs gay.
Yeah,
I've been listening to a lot of Alex Jones lately, and I got to tell you, that is comedy. Do you listen to Alex Jones at all?
Oh yeah. How else would I get my water filters?
Listen, I take these vitamins every day. I can't get a sponsor because I'm so passion crazy, but I got these vitamins.
Does he not have any sponsors?
He doesn't have any sponsors.
He exists purely as a subscription model?
No, not he has like a subscription model, so you can watch the TV, which is like five a month, but he sells vitamins.
He sells everything. He sells them.
He sells vitamins.
Get your Haley for Prison t-shirt at alexjones.com.
I like when he talks about his vitamins. He's like, before I took these vitamins, it's like my body was flabby, but now I got vigor, strength. I'm fucking toned. It's like erotic as shit.
I watched him
shit.
Live stream the, what was it, the second debate? It was pretty good.
To get him, Trump! Attacker!
Is he behind the Trump train? Oh my God, are you kidding?
Oh, it's great. It's entertaining.
They're terrified of Trump because he's going to take out the globalists. The globalists are all just terrified of him.
They're shaking in their boots.
They're shaking. He goes, listen,
You listen to Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. Do you know that?
Yeah. Wow. But I also listen to David Axelrod and Ezra Klein and
very true.
Yeah,
the best. You try to balance it out, but man, people would never say, "Oh, Chris Spangle." Yeah, he's an avid Alex Jones and Glenn Beck listener.
Hilarious.
Well, it's the talking, then he yells randomly. Like, he could be like this: like you just give like a random topic where like, why do you think school funding should be like? You'd be like, "Oh, this is." I think we should definitely return the goddamn fucking tax money.
He starts sweating. If you watch the videos too, like he'll start sweating and turning red, and he looks like he's about to have a heart attack.
Listen, I haven't even had any coffee today. I've just had so many vitamins.
Like he follows a bell curve when he talks. Like it starts off like a normal discussion, but escalates to full blown yelling, then back to like, you know, like I'm just telling
God
you guys.
Forgive me.
The fucking globalist reptilians. It's like a bell curve of like. Emotion that Rose said. I think he's like bipolar when I watch him. It's like you have some serious mental like deficiencies if you're just constantly.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's figured out a business model. We can sell vitamins and only podcast.
Listen, I don't get to, you know, I'm just so busy. I mean, we need to hire another 15 employees here. These people, they work so hard for you every year.
Do you think he orders foods that way too? Like with a bell curve? Like he's just like, he goes to McDonald's, right? And he's got like 20 bucks. So he's got to buy like for five people. He's like, I need a large fry, a McChicken, and a goddamn fucking Diet Coke with that aspartame that makes you fucking frogs gay.
I went to McDonald's today, and they didn't have Coke. And I was like,
I'm going to have it at number one. I make that a large fry to like a Coke.
We're out of Coke.
See, the Rothschilds call the Coke for all
it's George Sir.
George Soros, globalist.
Have you heard
of global scum?
I didn't realize. So, like, Piers Morgan had him on. Was he this far down the rabbit hole when Piers Morgan had
him
on?
Are you kidding me?
He's always been that extreme.
He's been great.
Politicians go on his show.
Trump's been on it.
Rand Paul's been on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The Pauls and Trump are willing to tiptoe right into the alt-right.
But, like, hasn't Ted Cruz been on it?
I don't know.
Because it's in Texas?
Maybe.
I have a theory that Alex Jones is like a 1980s government like DNA splicing conspiracy where they took like the DNA of George Wallace and combined it with Ric Flair, and this is what they got. Because, you know, it's just like, he's like a 1980s wrestler that got a podcast that he never stopped the roid abuse. So it's just like everything he does is screaming and yelling. So like I really think he's like a government DNA clone of Ric Flair and George Wallace because it's just a bunch of like racist and like loud tirades.
Listen, you know, I don't get to watch many Trump speeches. We're working so hard here. So, you know, listen, I catch Trump speeches at night. My kids, they, you know, they're 8, 7, and 14, and they beg to watch Trump speeches at night. So we get dinner. We, you know, they do their homework because I'm a good dad, and then we watch Trump.
Your Alex Jones impersonation is so terrible. It's I know. You're like, you don't even inflect your voice. Like, you got to fucking yell, Chris.
No, he claims that he watches Trump. His kids beg to watch Trump speeches at night.
There's actually a conspiracy that he's Bill Hicks.
Who's Bill Hicks?
The comedian.
The comedian from the 80s. So they do look alike.
Yeah.
Is this like JonBenet and it's Katy Perry?
Yeah, it's like a legit conspiracy.
Let's talk about real conspiracy. Bill Clinton is not Chelsea's dad.
I googled the truth about Alex Jones, and I ended
up... CIA.
He's CIA. His whole family, my uncle's in the
CIA.
They're
all Jews. You get in deep
right.
enough,
right.
go down the Jew rabbit hole.
Parentheses yep. around every yep. name.
He's so it is. It's fascinating, because the conspiracy nuts have their own version of conspiracy nuts about
the conspiracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conspiracy hole.
Just a level of crazy that I just can't.
I love it.
Jones, to me, I love listening to him because I love to hear the absolute. He's so hyperbolic. He's the definition of hyperbolic propaganda. Like everything. He could describe.
But it's not even for a state, it's for like the separatists and like
There's no discernible ideology. Except
the
globalists. He's against the globalists.
Yeah.
But that is even murky and ill-defined.
What's great is, though, he'll take like an actual news story that's actually pretty good news. Like right. WikiLeaks or something will come out, and he'll be like, oh, I've seen these documents, and he'll tie it. He's actually got his history down, like, of shit that's actually happened that people don't know about. But then he'll just like go off on a tangent, be like, oh, it was the Greys or whatever, you know. Like, dude, what are you...
Right. He's got this whole alternative history. And the funny thing is he'll sit there and he'll go, listen, you know, it's in Washington. They decry the Washington Post, the CNN,
the liberal media, the MSM.
But then he also uses that as a justification to back up his theories. So I was listening to this. You can look it up. It's in the Washington Post. Like, his sourcing is basically, I read it one time somewhere to look
Jeb
it up.
Bush? That was hilarious. Right. About Jeb Bush and Nazi gold?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. His sourcing was, I read it sometime, one time in the New York Times. You can look it up. That was his sourcing. I mean, it was so funny. So, yeah, he's
Justin Bieber! I'm a... Magellan! I'm circumnavigated the world!
I'm a liberal now.
To be fair, Glenn Beck is pretty crazy, too, with the Cheeto shit. Like, where he's like, I'm gonna...
Yes!
Smash these flaming hot Cheetos and rub my face into it. It's like, Glenn... Do you need $5, man? Do you need some subscribers? Because you're going off the tangent. So, like, when Chris listens to Glenn Beck, it's just funny because he's like, Alex Jones is hilarious. But Glenn Beck is basically like a shadow of Alex Jones, where it's just like, give Glenn Beck like 5 more years and enough like Percocets, and he will be Alex Jones level.
I don't feel like Beck actually tries to be somewhat sourced and can back up his opinions with history, you know, and his history, of course, is like Alex Jones. It's filtered through this a certain lens. He's looking for things that fit his narrative,
absolutely.
but he's a little more rigorous than Alex Jones. Listen, Alex Jones is just sloppy.
It's about the perks, dude, because Rush Limbaugh used to be pretty cool until he got on the perks. And then when he got on the perks, Rush Limbaugh became like, you know, Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, Percocets.
God tier Rush. Yeah.
So, you know, just put Glenn back on a couple like opiates and just let him fucking go where he needs to go. Like,
go
I watched a video of like a South Carolina, like in Charleston, of like a black reporter that came to approach this white guy because he like used a racial slur. And then as he approached the white guy, I'm like, that's a fucking crackhead. You know, I'm like, this is going to be entertaining. But the black reporter's like, don't you understand how hurtful that word is? And as the guy sitting there, be like, I could say if I want. And,
whoa, James.
Just smokes
no.
a crack rock.
No. No.
That one's got to come off.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing.
Dump button.
Yeah, we don't have standards unless it comes to that word.
That's... Can you put Tad Western on here instead of my actual
yeah,
name?
No kidding. Yeah. Good God.
It doesn't have the impact unless I paraphrase it.
Trust me, it was impactful.
Paraphrase it. Jeez.
Well, Trump's just winning sure a couple you... states. Come on, Trump's ahead in a couple states. We can say it now. Like, we're all white here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right.
My goodness.
If you've got your headphones there, you can throw on the headphones and you can hear it. But this, I'll play this for the audience. It is audio of Alex Jones, and he's decided that he's going to be a liberal. So you can hear him losing his mind.
I'm feeling really powerful right now. All of you are going to submit to us. Our time of liberalism is here. You drink that fluoride. You take those vaccines. Donald Trump says vaccines might be dangerous because one of his kids got hurt. Shut up! You don't have free speech. You understand? You listen to me. I rule this country now. I'm liberal. Screw him. Ban his free speech right now. Ban it! Let me tell you what else you do. You don't visit InfoWarsLife.com with the number one new vitamin.
The greatest plug ever.
Oh my God. See, the
at the end, he plugs the vitamins. That's on Oliver Darcy on his Twitter.
How much do you think he makes?
On 10/10/16. He makes a lot. He's got like a dozen employees.
He makes good money.
He's got...
Selling vitamins.
He's got as many listeners on air as my day job does.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's huge.
Yeah.
Did you not... How do you not... I figured you'd... You know,
I avoid like Sean Hannity. I avoid Bill O'Reilly. I avoid Alex
Hyper-partisan,
Jones.
Hyperpartisan. Yeah,
like, this is actual entertainment. This isn't like.
Yeah, this is.
Well, see, like I actually considered him higher brow. Like that's the reason I don't listen to Glenn Beck either. Is because like I can pretty much tell you how he's going to break things down. Like he wants to be libertarian, but at the end of the day, he's a Mormon, and that's how he's going to come down every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beck will surprise you.
He does. Like he will, but then it's when push comes to shove, he wants Ted Cruz.
No, Alex Jones is just pure comedy. Like if you're listening to us and you believe what Alex Jones says, of course there's going to be kernels of truth in some of what he says. Like there are places where I find myself overlapping. Like what he says about the Council on Foreign Relations is absolutely true. The whole point of the Council on Foreign Relations is to stockpile cabinet posts, cabinet members, you know, and pay them so they don't have to go get a real job. You know, but
it's basically like the Clinton Global Initiative.
Right. Except we look at it like, all right, yeah, that's how it is. It's not nefarious to us, but to him, it's...
Oh, it's collaboration and like a global world order.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's a new world
order. So he probably hates the Trilateral Commission the Bohemian Club Bohemian Grove.
He's infiltrated it.
He's broken into it.
He broke in like 97 or
something. Yeah, did a documentary. That's actually how he got started. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sony Handycam broke into the Bohemian Grove.
How'd he get in there?
He snuck through the woods.
I mean, he's not an easily missed guy in his voice and antics.
Who went with him?
I'm quick like a seal.
I don't have no clue.
Well, I can't remember who.
The only thing that lets me know is like WoW's in the wrong market because we're making comedy, but we should make comedy that's a conspiracy comedy because then we can get a real studio. You can get
a bigger soundboard. All right.
This is a nice studio.
We have more than enough soundboard.
There's all kinds of pussy running around.
I have.
That's true. There is one additional pussy, and I feel like that needs to be talked about.
Did you cuck her? Did you cuck him?
Listen.
Did you dick her down?
No. My former roommate.
Ain't no punk. I'm a fuck.
Muffins. She needed a place to stay, and I offered to let Muffins come back and live.
So now you have how many cats?
I have three.
Do they share a litter box?
No, they have. They each have their own individual litter box.
Really?
Where are said litter boxes?
In my bedroom.
All three.
What? Where else am I going to put them? Under the table?
Is it like a party?
It is a party.
You
yes.
have litter boxes in your bedroom. Do you fuck people back there? Because there's way. There's no way they're getting in the mood when it's like it smells like cat piss.
It doesn't. It
right?
Look,
is that? Are you horny?
Yeah, they heard it.
I'm a very clean person.
You are immaculately clean. Yeah. I'll say that. You can't tell that he has a single cat in his apartment.
Does
ever.
It smell like cat?
No, your place is pristine at all times.
Right.
When you are stressed out, it's because like the pillows aren't properly fluffed on your couch.
Yeah, like my bathroom. Sure. Yeah, my bathroom is dirty, and I'm like not in a good place.
Right. Yeah. No. Like you can't tell that he has any, which is amazing because with three, you wouldn't be able to tell there's one.
Right.
No, so, ladies, do not let that deter you from falling for dear leader.
I'm just curious if he's like balls deep, five strokes in, she smells it, and he's like, don't worry, baby, it's just a pheromone.
It's impossible. And his place is way too clean for it to ever smell.
It's never happened.
It can't.
Ever.
I want it to
happen. He would have so much anxiety if he even saw cat hair somewhere.
Oh, yeah. No, I vacuum three times a week.
Damn.
But no, when we retreat to the bedroom, it's usually dark in there, so you can't see it. And secondly, that's never been an issue. The cats are usually hiding because there's so much screaming going on.
Oh, because they're like, no, don't take me.
No.
Give me back.
I want it so to be the opposite because the story would be so fucking hilarious. It's like, yeah, I invited this girl over and we were like getting busy, but she smelled my litter box and she went out fucking screaming. But I'm like, it's okay, baby. I'm just raking in the pussy. I want it to be like that. Like, that's how I'm envisioning it in my mind.
I know.
That's how it's going to go down in the group chats. That's how it's just.
No, very clean. So, ladies, please, spangle@weirdlibertarians.com.
Candles of clean linen all over the house.
Yeah, the like lemon scented clean linen.
Your bathroom smells like bleach. I know you bleach the fucker every day. It's
I bleached the toilet before I left this morning.
That's the soda he drinks.
Right.
When the anxiety gets to him from a dirty house, he just goes in there and pops a bleach soda.
Takes a shot of bleach.
Yep.
And like I'm the opposite where it's like, how long have those dishes been there? I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Like, am I out of paper plates yet? Because I'm definitely not doing those till I am.
Right. Oh,
like,
no.
I still live like I'm like 21 years old at the frat house. I'm just like, are you going to vacuum today? I'm like... Lots of vacuum.
James Neese, father of two.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I just think that as a dude that I shouldn't have to do the dishes. I'm like, Heather, this is your fucking job. You know, she thinks I'm joking, but I'm not.
James Neese, Trump voter.
Deplorable.
Right. Really, like, one time she's like, are you going to take the kids to the park? I'm like, I already worked 8 hours today. Sorry, babe. I'm going to like play video
games.
I'm
off the clock.
Yeah, I'm off the fucking clock.
I'll teach you how to shotgun a tall boy and then smash a burrito.
Oh, yeah. Just like, you know, I do that you know, like, she's like, get Taco Bell. I'm like, yeah, I got my kids a taco. I get my whole tacos and stuff. Like,
crunchy
like,
or soft?
Aren't they like 12 soft. Months old?
Yeah, I'm like, have some tacos. What up?
One is a newborn, right?
Yeah.
Look at not even a shred of like, it just.
Is Heather a girlfriend or a wife?
She's like a living wife, girlfriend. I think she's common law.
Is it Facebook?
Do libertarians even believe in common law?
Yeah. No. If there's no contract, it isn't enforceable.
He doesn't even know.
Is it Facebook official?
Yeah, I mean, it's on Facebook, and, you know, it is what it is.
Which means, she lives there.
Yeah, she's
can't
there.
Get rid of her.
God, I think the best part is like...
Not even a shred of, I wonder if I satisfy her needs.
Is that the same... Well, is she the
left,
same mom
so
for both? Mm-hmm. Okay.
No,
so you're a stand-up guy. You just play a deplorable on podcasts.
No, she yells at me. She's like, it's fucking 3 a.m. Are you going to go to bed or not? Because you're waking the kids up. I'm like, I am fucking shitposting. Like, you learn
there are memes to be posted.
Oh, yeah. That's the greatest thing about waking up in the morning is to see the conversation James had with himself alone.
Absolutely.
In chat.
No, it's always with Aaron.
Aaron's
a drunk
until
insomniac.
He passes out. Yeah.
And then, it's me and Aaron usually, and it's just like, and Heather's like,
you both are tripping on ketamine or whatever the fuck.
You need to go to bed. She's like, how come you don't post pictures of your kids? I'm like, I'm a shit poster. I post the fucking pictures of the kids. They're gonna fucking Photoshop it. Like, learn the internet, girl.
That's a fair point.
Like, learn the internet, girl. And you know, I'm like, you're 25. Learn the fucking internet. Like, I've been on it for a while.
I invented 4chan. Ever heard of it?
Weren't you one of the original people on 4chan?
Yep.
Like. How like give yourself a number.
God, it's been like 12 years.
Well, so like were you there before, like were you like number 100 or you know?
Probably like in the 700s.
Nice.
I mean, that's before I was like two.
Were you ever a mod?
Yeah, I was a mod on B then A, so the anime thread. I mean, I would think if I would have saved everything from 4chan from B and A, I would have like 40 terabytes of anime titties, and like it would be caliente. And
could it correct the record have bought you off?
What?
Correct the record. They bought you off and like
for
your mod powers.
Well, like people would, as a mod, they would try to get you to like get them unbanned. They're like, you should unban me, bro. Like, I'm like, come into IRC.
Tits
we'll
get the fuck out.
I mean, I've had people pay me like $20 in PayPal before they unbanned. Like, order me.
Did you do it?
Yeah, like I've had literally a person order me a blooming fucking onion from Outback Steakhouse.
fortunate.
For an unban. Like, dude, I will get you this blooming onion right now. And like, I'm sitting there and like, you know,
is that on
University
your Amazon wish list?
This is before Amazon.
And I'm like, dude, I will unban you if you give me this blooming onion. And I went there and I got that blooming onion and I unbanned him and it was fucking awesome. We're sitting in Skype. I'm fucking filming myself.
Pics of it?
Yeah, I was eating the fucking blooming onion.
Why was that your
Anon came through?
Why did you choose a blooming onion?
I don't know. It was like just random.
Random shit ever.
Random shit. But even then, like I used to do web development for Cam Girls as well when I was on 4chan back in college for money.
Right.
So like I would have to like program like the actual web, you know, like the things to do their web shows and stuff, and they give me free tokens, you know. So basically, they're paying me in pussy that I can't hit.
Do you sell it? I would have just sold it.
No, I have like a, if I could find my old phone, I have like a gigantic nude collection from all that when it was posted on there, you know, like it's just, it's top notch. And like, I've got like things where.
You are literally exactly what Hillary Clinton was talking about when she was talking about basket of deplorables.
No, like I think.
You're literally what every news story is about when they talk about WikiLeaks and Trump supporters and. Alt-right.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember fucking, it was there's a raid, because there's raids in Indianapolis that happened in Beech Grove and the factories there. And, like, I remember, like, it was me and Evan, not the libertarian Evan, but some dude that just smokes a lot of pot over there in College Avenue.
Same difference.
But, you know, me and Evan, like, we hooked up with these goth chicks, and I'm like, you know what would be funny, dude? It's like, if I'm, like, balls deep in this bitch, and you, like, fucking take a photo of me just making, like, weird-ass fucking faces and doing hand signals. So, like,
gang sign?
Yeah, like, and then I had those photos, and I was laughing and kecking, you know, just being like, yes! I mean, like, back in, like, when I was, like, 20 years old, like, I just did a bunch of bullshit, like, speedballing, drinking lean.
Hell yeah.
What is lean? Lean's
good. Promethazine and Sprite, or whatever the hell you want to mix
what
it
is
with.
Promethazine?
And why don't you call 313-8304-8004 and find out.
It's 2813-8004.
It's been a while the promethazine kicked in.
Yeah.
Is this some sort of rap?
That's Mike Jones. You can hit him on the low.
Rap lyric?
Yeah.
No, like
H-Town stand up.
Which brings me to the point, which was we were talking about, like, how that argument with Roger, and like that's what makes me libertarian, is the fact that I've never shown away from a glass of lean, or like, you know, 4 or 5 Xanax to get me where I want to go.
Never turned down a
So line before of coke. Before you guys got here, James of course got here an hour early. And James,
it's either 2 hours late or 2 to 7 hours early.
You're right. And he sat and had a running monologue on the couch, and I listened to like 90% of it. The other 10% was Chris Matthews, so I wish I had filled it in with James Knees. But so
that's
he
a hell
filled
of a combo right there. He guys should have a TV show.
He was filling me in on all kinds of political thoughts, a lot of political strategy that was very lucent and clear. Some of which he will share later. He was sharing with me about WikiLeaks, and he was telling me about how much he hates everyone who lives in New Hampshire, especially Roger Paxton.
Of the Lava Flow podcast.
Right.
You just named one of the best libertarian podcasts to listen to.
616 likes. You know what has more likes than 616 likes? Me posting my dick on Facebook and making it in a group. Roger, you are less popular than my dick.
Is that true? Is that verifiable?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I guarantee I post my dick, I can have, like,
so it's a hypothetical.
Likes.
It's not, we can't, you know, point to it as evidence.
I'll do it. I'm just saying that.
Which group? Hill Dogs?
Yeah, I can burn memes for Bernie Bros. I don't give a like,
Jill Stein's
dick's
dank
out for Trump. Dick's out for Stein.
Jill Stein's dank meme stash.
No, but the issue with like me and Paxton is like Paxton doesn't understand the art of trolling, and it's funny right. Because he's like a director of IT. He's like, but I think he's the type of computer nerd that got into it because it's like a business deal, as opposed to someone that's lived on the internet his entire life.
Right,
whereas
yeah.
I have.
It was a financial decision.
Oh, yeah. Like Roger never directly says it, but Roger doesn't like this show because of the first 20 minutes, you know, 25 minutes. We just chit-chat a little bit.
That's why we got 21,000 likes. What up, player?
And, you know, Roger just wants to get straight to the information, which, cool. We promote Roger's podcast. He's an ANCAP. We're not ANCAPs. We're more constitutional Republicans than anarcho-capitalists, more minarchists than voluntarians.
We're libertarian fluid.
Right. And Roger thinks that we are dirty heretics, but that's why we promote Rogers, because he has a great podcast.
Right, Roger does a wonderful job and is an excellent host, and I highly enjoy his show because it's not, you know, it's not necessarily how I feel in the application of libertarianism, but for the theoretical discussions, it's wonderful.
Like, his last episode was about the philosophical reasons for not voting, which I think is absolute hogwash and stupid. But
he does an excellent job at laying it out,
right.
Regardless, if that's something you've never heard, Rogers is the best to go hear it.
I feel like Greg here is being like Sway Dizzle off MTV News, and I'm like Eazy-E talking shit about Dr. Dre.
Right. It's now, James is probably the number one tormentor online of people that live in New Hampshire, are part of the Free State, and Roger specifically.
We're a free state, but we're 43% Clinton.
Well, actually, didn't Bernie win the primary and Trump?
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, yeah, but Clinton is going to win the state like 47-43.
Is she? Is that the polling now? I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
polling. I haven't seen New Hampshire.
She's got a 5-point lead there.
Which brings me to the point that I think the Free State Project is a waste of time. Like, because they all moved there for the sole aspect of being a demographic contingency, where it's just like, if we get enough libertarians.
Yeah, it was a saturation move.
Yeah. And they get there and they all move there and they get hundreds of people there and they can't even win a goddamn mayoral seat in a small town where the only thing there is a fucking Arby's and a public library.
Is that well? There's Keene State College.
I mean, yeah, but it's the stated goal was to cause change. You know, we can affect elections, like,
right?
But
I don't think they haven't. They don't have enough concentration to actually, because Keene's not a small town. Like they have a national pumpkin festival and Halloween festival, and then they have a state college there. Like it probably was just a bit too big for them to be able to saturate it like they expected.
I mean, even if
and they took commitments from libertarians.
Well, they had the pledge, didn't they?
Well, I mean, but it's libertarians taking the pledge, so like it's tough to. And then there was no enforcement mechanism for people that didn't. No,
but here's the thing: is like
we need helicopters.
I know
the Duggars, like the silly family with 21 kids on there. The Duggars are an interesting aspect because they're playing a demographic hedging game where, you know, Jim Bob is fucking dicked her down 21 times, there's 21 kids, but each one of those kids follow that same path in Arkansas. They all live in the same little area in Arkansas. So they're 21 kids, and her daughter has 21 kids, her son has 21 kids. Exponentially, within like 5 or 6 generations, there's going to be like literally 12,000 Duggars with all the same ideology that's taught for them from birth to death. And it's basically, this is what we are, this is our faith, this is how we vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just by that, demographics of the Duggars doing that, they can actually control an entire voting block in Arkansas.
True.
And we can't get enough libertarians to get together on their free will. I mean,
well, I mean, I think a big part of that, though, is that's the size of the area you target. I mean, they shot high, Ian and
he shot high. All right.
Ian Freeman, and then what? Cantwell was one of the originals, and who else were the original founders?
Oh, I have no clue.
But I mean, those guys had already had a base there, and so it wasn't like it wasn't something where they like just looked at New Hampshire and said, "This is where we're going to go." Wasn't it something where they were kind of already set up and the potential existed for it?
Well, no, it's. They moved there with the pledge. It's like, well, this is the state that has the freest law. They look at the economics.
But Keene, specifically, they already were there, right? Yeah, so wasn't that where Free Talk Live was out of before all this?
Yeah, Free Talk.
My issue with them is they also undermine libertarian candidates. Like, my issue with the current New Hampshire Libertarian Party is it's decidedly anti-Johnson to a point it works against anti-Johnson. And especially when you're trying to get like a 5% nationality poll. When you run Daryl Perry, who decides to run a separate write-in candidacy.
Is that really like, I haven't even paid attention. Is that really going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
He that has momentum.
Yep. And he is running a counter campaign, and he's also now the chair of the New Hampshire Party. So he's trickling that idea down to the New Hampshire Party. Which kind of irks me to the fact that, you know, they're like, well, you're a libertarian, you can do what you want. I'm like, no, but you're a political party, and technically, if you're going to go by your own
boundaries,
if you're going to go by your own NAP principle, you're technically violating a NAP because 1,000 delegates decided that this is our candidate, and you're basically saying fuck you to these 1,000 delegates. I want to run my own campaign for my own vanity issues. Because Daryl Perry wasn't even a part of the Libertarian Party until he joined as a lifetime member. He was the Liberty Party of New Hampshire. And so,
oh, really? Mm-hmm. When did that happen? Was that recently?
Yep. I think it was 2 years. He abandoned the Liberty Party to join the Libertarian Party.
Really?
This last election cycle.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, you know, as you're running these specific ANCAPs in the New Hampshire Party, you're undermining the entire like national party as well as these other state parties. And it's a concentrated effort to kind of throw a wrench. And that's what the
mentality. And that bugs you?
Yeah, it's the mentality in Keene. That's why I dislike New Hampshire is...
The entire state or just Keene specifically in the new Free State Project?
The whole Free State Project. I mean, the state's pretty boring, too. It's not like Vermont with syrup. But, you know, it's...
Scissor.
When everybody there kind of just does their own independent thing, they don't coalesce as one unitary unit, so to speak, that they can't get goals accomplished. And there's enough people there to get some significant goals accomplished. I mean, they might not like sweep a congressional district, but there's enough there.
They could win a state house, like a state level. Have they won a state house of representative position at all?
No.
Really? After all this time?
Like the there's people that run and say they're affiliated with it, but there's not been a concentrated like effort from the FSP that says this is our candidate.
Is it a hybrid state? I think it's a hybrid state where it's one of those states where you can say I'm Republican, and you can be nominated on two.
Multiple tickets.
Right.
Like what
Yeah, this loser out in Vegas or whatever that is.
Well, Indiana LPIN did, not knowing that a Republican had won a primary, and then we nominated him for our convention.
Yeah, but we're not a fusion.
He didn't tell anybody.
We're not a fusion state, so yeah. he had to choose to be a Republican or a Libertarian.
How did that end up? Did he choose?
Not a clue.
Not a clue?
No. F that guy.
Yeah.
Traitor.
Yep. He was the one that was like very, he was like a pro-Muslim Libertarian, and I just felt all the people in there being like, I'm not that pro-border, open border.
he was so weird.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that was clearly something where he was doing it to challenge not being a fusion state.
Yeah,
exactly. He was seeking attention.
And we generally here in this state, we don't cotton to be, you know, using our, there's one guy who wants to, he's a felon for a child sex crime, and he wants to run as a Libertarian on like a state, and you can't be a felon and run for a state on at a local office.
And, well, you can run for two positions, right? Secretary or
no, you can only run for one office, and you can't be a felon when you run for that office according to our constitution, and he wants to challenge the constitutionality of it. And the Libertarian Party keeps saying, A, no, we would never have you on our ballot anyways, because it's a violent crime of the child, no less. And you're a really creepy, weird person. And three, we don't run to sue.
Yeah,
like we run to be a serious political.
Yeah, we're
party.
A political party. We're not, you know, a platform
an activist.
To,
yeah,
you know, to rabble rouse.
Right. Comes the Socialist Party being like, we'll take any fucking body.
You've actually attended an Indiana Socialist meeting. Yeah,
I've tried to work with them several times on Coalition on Ground Game, and that was basically a
colossal waste of time.
Yeah, it's. Trying to work with them is John Strinker from Carmel. He was running in for state house at the time. So I attended the meeting and like I couldn't get them to a point where if you want to look at the big picture and you say, okay, you want a third party victory because you can't handle this duopoly, but I can't coalition bill with people that are so ideologically bound to argue every minor detail of something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem even with inner libertarian issues is even in this election cycle is, if you look at the structure of like how these campaigns are run, especially from like a top-down perspective, there's so much infighting based on ideological syncretizations that they can't seem to get over. And like I was telling you before we started this podcast is we focus a lot on like New Mexico for Gary Johnson. And, you know, there's a lot of hope that he's going to take it. I mean, it's the best shot statistically.
You would think a two-term governor would be reelected.
From that state.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he was unanimously popular and left the place in a unbelievably sound financial position when he inherited a very terrible financial position.
But as James pointed out, the problem is if McMullen wins Utah and Gary wins New Mexico, McMullen has one electoral vote on him. And so James's point was what?
Is McMullen will win if it's a break, no one gets 270. But the Johnson's campaign should have hit states like Nebraska and Maine. The reason why is because it's not a winner-take-all state. You don't have to focus on a whole state. And in fact, Nebraska is a unique state because a lot of the population is concentrated on one city. There's a lot of rural areas. So you can get these rural areas that compromise like the three or four districts that's in Nebraska. You can win at least one or two of those and maybe one in Maine. You would have enough electoral votes to automatically win when it goes to the House. You beat Evan. You deadlock the race for the president because you take these district votes and New Mexico. And, you know, as I talked to like some leadership, you know, they're focusing on Alaska, and I'm like, Alaska's kind of a bad choice.
It's a terrible choice. Yeah.
And if you would have focused on these small districts, because there's only like 10,000 people in these districts, that's a way more manageable than
you can meet and get to know every single one and just, you know, with what limited resources we have, use them in the most effective way.
Just take a selfie with them. They'll vote.
Yeah, like
literally. I mean, just meet them every time. Go to their birthday parties. Have a birthday party for them. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It is. That's the kind of strategic thinking that's usually. It's so far outside the box, and it's so non-traditional.
Well, you're not gonna win outright. There's no way.
No, but
you can't.
No, but I think you know there were two states of mind. In my opinion, from what I can gather from the campaigns, like the picking of Bill Weld was to court the disillusioned Republicans that didn't want to have to claim Trump, and they wanted a financial network comprised of Northeastern Republican money.
I also think that it was also a signal to the Washington establishment and the Washington press. Yeah,
we are no longer outsiders only talking about libertarianism. We have ideas,
right?
And though the problem was. The way the election shaped up was that there was a lot of animosity by the left, the young left, that felt screwed over by Bernie Sanders not getting the nomination. And so the whole point of Weld was to tap into the right.
Yeah.
The problem is, and Gary comes from the right, but Gary just doesn't speak Republican anymore.
Right.
He just has lost the ability to speak it, and so what they ended up doing was targeting...
That's largely happened to me, too. Yeah. I mean, I've been out of the Republican Party for 10 years, and I just don't... I'm more left than I am right.
I mean, you are a really good... I think that you and what you believe are like a perfect representation of the average American. Like, mm-hmm. you just want... It's like Abdul. You want efficiency, you want smart people and effectiveness and trying to limit government as much as possible
right.
without harming people's lives.
Sure.
But with Gary, he has very much adopted just a narrative of he identifies with the left.
Yeah.
Except the problem was the people that were burnt out by Bernie either lost all faith in the political process,
mm-hmm.
went to Jill Stein because she's done an excellent job of representing the left that's been alienated. And at the end of the day, the ones that were going to stick around are going to get in line with Hillary because they still want a path in politics, and sure. that provides the best opportunity.
And 90% of those people went back. I mean, and you know, the because people on the left, Trump, yeah, the people on the left still haven't been disillusioned. They're at the beginning. They're at the 2007 Ron Paul revolution. Absolutely. They still think that there's hope in the Democratic Party to reform it. Whereas on the right, they know better.
No, I mean, Ron Paul,
they've been through it. Yeah, they've been through it. The Tea Party, the Ron Paul people. We've seen that party kick people with libertarian leanings out of it.
Yep. Right? They let you, they tolerate you just enough.
And then the religious. I mean, that's yeah, about it. There's no in between.
Yeah.
No.
Right. There's the angry. Yeah, it's elderly white people that want to go back in time and think they know best. It is right now a disillusioned group of fiscal conservatives only and who really don't care about the social issues, yeah. who can't. Really don't want to have to claim Trump because they're like Nelson Rockefeller Republicans. And then there are the Tea Party Express, like the remnants of that have kind of morphed into the Trump deplorables.
Well, let's break it down into let's be more specific. Let's break it down into very big chunks of the population. What Trump has done is
a lot of it has to do with the region.
Well, yeah. Regional, but you for the first time will have a Republican nominee that will. Since the first time since the first Eisenhower election, he will not get the majority of college-educated whites. You know, the Republican Party forever was the party of the elite, Northeast, liberal, college-educated, you know, the Rockefellers, you know, the Goldwater Revolution. That's why it was a revolution, is because it was, you know, kind of bringing in that element. And
the Western rugged style individualism into the Republican Party.
But there was also another element to what Goldwater did. Although Goldwater helped form the Arizona branch of the NAACP, Goldwater also kind of, there was a little bit of dog whistle politics in courting that Southern racist vote.
Who were homeless.
That were homeless at the time because LBJ, who was once their champion, had forsaken them for that election.
And that's exactly what Trump's doing. He's going after the who has people who think they've hit rock bottom, they don't have any other choice.
Yeah, they're poor white
screw over the system.
No, not to right. This is going to sound terrible, but they're the poor white trash who feel like no one's given a crap about them and since Ross Perot.
Yeah, he's sure. not going for the educated vote. Obviously.
Sure, and even Clinton kind of spoke for them, and then Hillary tried to revive that in 2008, and that's why she was here in Indiana to try and court that vote. You know, the blue collar, the union worker, the poor,
the John Gregg Democrat,
right? The poor, uneducated white person, and Trump has activated and basically poured gasoline on the Tea Party, and the Republican Party largely from here on out will be the party of the poor, uneducated white, and especially male.
That's a dead strategy,
it's an old demographic, and so what you have is you have the college educated whites. Basically, every minority group are all going to start voting Democrat. But what happens to the people that are not socialist? What happens to the people that are fiscally conservative? What happens
Jim
to
Jim Webb supporters?
Sure. Like, what happens to the person like me? Okay. I'm with the Democrats and what they say, not what they do, because right. Hillary's a huge hawk, but I'm with Bernie Sanders on reforming the banking system, making it more fair. Being non-interventionist,
shining a light on corruption,
ending, you know, the
corporate welfare,
right? All the stuff that is coming out in Hillary Clinton's emails, but I'm never going to vote for Bernie's economics. So where do I end up? If I look at it and I go, okay, the Libertarian Party can't seem to put together a winning strategy. The Republican Party is going the way of the uneducated white male, which to me sounds racist. And to a large extent, it is using racial politics to try and win an election. And it's failing miserably with every minority group except the uneducated white male.
It's white pride cloaked in nationalism.
Exactly. And I'm not okay with that. I'm not going to associate myself with that. And I'm not going to vote Democrat because I'm not going to vote for their economic policies. I'm not going to vote for further corruption. So where do I go?
There is a winning strategy to the LP. The issue with the LP, especially let's just use here in Indiana, for example, is when we run candidates for state offices and we run them for like local offices, what we have is a tendency to attract a one-time, one-go candidate, which is these people that come to us, I put their name on the ballot, and they run like a okay campaign or no campaign at all, and they just get their name on the ballot. People vote 3%, 4%, 5%. Because we get these random people, I mean, even some people running our congressional seats, I mean, like Lucy and Matt, you know, like we know them very well, and they might have successful jobs. Matt has a really nice job, but how well interconnected is Matt with that community? Now let's take the case of Jeremiah Morrill, and we look at Newcastle, and we look at Henry County politics. Jeremiah's on the park board. He was good enough to get on the park board. He always
president of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He always pulls around 20-something percent, and the reason why is because he has so much ground game from working at 4-H fair, from working with these people.
Working with their kids.
Yeah, if we were to run, like in 2018, a state house candidate, it would be, and Jeremiah decided he wants to run for state house, it would be stupid to not throw money at that campaign, because if anybody has a statistical chance of making a win, especially after his being appointed to president of the park board with that name recognition, it would be Jeremiah. If we throw money at some random candidate in Indianapolis, no one's going to win in Indianapolis anytime soon.
Sure.
Like, you're going to get dominated by Democrats every turn you go.
Yeah.
But for like places where we do strong in, like Henry County,
which is a rural eastern Indiana county that is largely Republican, but there's a lot of agriculture there, and so agriculture, those voters tend to be a little more friendly to Democrats, and so it's not a blowout Republican county. But if you are, but the Republicans have most of the control, so it's an independent leaning county that has one party control, and if a Libertarian person, just one person, volunteers and works in that community in a way that is not political, once they decide to become a political figure, they have more success.
Yeah, well, Melinda got within, when she ran, she got within like 100 votes of winning that. Like, there was a recount over that.
Explain who and what that is.
Melinda Kennedy, or whoever, what's her last name? Oh, let's just call her Melinda. She ran for a office in like southern Indiana, and she pulled like, it's like a county clerk office or something, to something really local.
What year?
Last election cycle, 2015.
Yeah, right.
She, I haven't heard from her since, but she got within 100 votes of winning the clerk's office to a point that it had to do a recount.
Wow.
There literally had to be a recount.
Triggered recount.
Yeah. And when you get to these places where, like, these small areas where you can make these wins, it would be foolish for the Libertarian Party to not fully support those candidates. I mean, some of the candidates might be upset, like, boo-hoo, my District 89 in Indianapolis isn't get the same attention as District 12 over there in Newcastle. But if I want to run a ground game where I want to make a win, because wins trickle down.
Absolutely. Right.
And if I can get one person in the state house, or I can get one person in the clerk's office, I mean, Rex's wife wins the judgeship, but that's just a nonpartisan office for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get something that can get you to the state house, and you know you can win that, and we have money to throw into it, it's stupid not to do that. You need one win, because the only issue that stops people from voting Libertarians half the time is because they think you don't win.
Sure.
So if you get that W, and you can kind of compound that to like other races for the next election cycle, you can build on that.
That changes the mindset completely.
Yeah, right. If he pulls a win, so you know, if Jeremiah or someone like with that amount of percentage or that much ground game, or find someone that's really connected with the community, not just a random person that's like, hi, you know,
Hi, I'm a Libertarian. I want to run for office.
I like to smoke weed. I run for office?
I mean, like, I understand with a small party, we kind of take what we can get. But if you can get like a really strong candidate that has a lot of ground game where he's already at, like, your chances for success are highly elevated. Because a lot of people, especially in small towns, don't really are going to vote for party line. They tend to do. There's always people that are going to straight ticket. But, you know, if I know, let's say Ed, and Ed's drinks with me at the Elks Lodge, and Ed runs this business that everybody goes to in town, everybody loves fucking Ed, they're going to vote for Ed no matter what labels next to his name. So if we don't get candidates like that going forward, we're never going to get a win.
Well, and here's, and I don't know if Greg and I agree on this or not, but like moving forward, we have to be the party that appeals to that fiscally conservative college educated person. And
the yuppie vote.
The yuppie vote of any minority, of both men and women. And fiscal issues have to be key, but at the same time, not sacrificing or making concessions on non-intervention, on
civil liberties,
privacy. On basic libertarian principles. You know, but not using the language of Republicans and not using the language of the left. What it comes down to is the libertarian movement has to be better prepared, not only in the arguments that are made. There's nobody really out there except for us and, you know, a few other podcasters and Reason out there, like, trying to take current events and create the arguments for or against certain things.
Our nominated candidates don't do it.
That's why
they struggle so poorly. Is they are brought on and they're supposed to have an interesting perspective, and they struggle to apply their philosophy to the current events because they're not asked to.
Even Bill Weld and Gary Johnson don't have a good messaging strategy.
They're the best we've seen yet,
right? But they're shitty.
They're failing.
Like Bill Weld took heat. People wrongly said that he was supporting Hillary Clinton because that's such an amateur, naive argument to say that if I criticize Trump, I must also criticize Clinton equally in the same statement.
It's a false binary, you know?
Right?
Oh, that's the news media too.
Well, yeah. But that's the expectation that libertarians, like, they're so paranoid about Bill Weld that if he criticizes
Trump,
then he must be supporting Hillary Clinton, and it's just so stupid. Like, the paranoia of libertarians
is Mike Pence criticizes Trump. It doesn't mean he's endorsing Hillary Clinton,
right? And so, you know, he came out and we're within 14 days of an election, and he's penning an article about why Donald Trump is not the right vote. Everybody knows that. Anybody who is going to vote for Trump or is not going to vote, Trump is a known
there
quantity.
Aren't these big this big block of undecided, right? Trump voters.
Right.
I think they're stuck in a time warp, too. They don't realize what...
This is a get-out election. It is a get out and inspire your base.
Tell
to show
me
up
why
on
you're
day.
Special. Yes. And so what Gary and his team have failed at largely is by trying to be nice, by trying to
make libertarianism fit.
And
playing the game that Donald and Hillary are playing.
Right. But
trying to get involved with it.
The truth
is, you should just stand back and say, this is what we're going to do, and
this is how we're going to do it.
Right.
And this is what
and
it's going to look
it.
Like.
And just
if you don't talk in generalities that are safe, that won't get... Because I think a lot of what they've tried to do is talk about issues in a way that is safe for any side as to not lose votes.
They have no idea who they're trying to pull over.
Exactly. And the problem with that is that you don't feed the red meat to your base. You know, Greg and I got into it in chat the other day saying, like...
And we weren't getting into it. We just have different views on it.
Right.
It's not something worth getting worked up about.
Cock was thrown 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, like the Libertarian Party base still is, you know, a 40-year base. There is a million people in here, and if those people don't have the red meat and the desire to defend you from the get-go, which they have not this election cycle, you get this election cycle.
There has to be a thirst, and
yeah,
if I look at it from top down...
There was a thirst for Gary Johnson and a fire in the base in 2012 for
absolutely.
Gary Johnson, and there has not been in 2016.
And that 2012 candidate would have had the same fire this year.
Absolutely.
To me, he seems like he just doesn't even want it.
Yeah. He's just been, he's out of practice.
Yeah.
That's all it is. He's out of practice, and he's been in an echo chamber for 4 years, and it's totally affected his political ability.
Yep.
But I don't think he really cares because he got the nod.
He didn't expect
it
to be like this. No one expected the opportunity to legitimately maybe get 10% as a third party candidate, like in 92 with Perot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that he genuinely cares. I think they're all overwhelmed.
Yes, because it is access to everything he's never had before. He is the shiny new thing, and when you aren't prepared like an actual candidate. Like Ross Perot was prepared because he was on Larry King every single night.
I don't know.
He ran an entire campaign taking questions from the American people every single night.
But how do you run for a party? How do you run for president and not be prepared? Like, why wouldn't
it was
you?
Unexpected.
Because when you... When
you're
you,
running for president.
But here's the
you
thing.
You should be
no,
expected.
Here, let me explain it to you. Let me explain it to you. So when you run a campaign that is going to reach 1% of the population...
We already knew he was going to get more than that.
And you raise a couple million dollars, then you get a certain level of campaign consultant. When you get to a level where you're at 10 to 15%, and $10 to $20 million, you're going to get a whole new level of consultant. But the problem is that, like, it's concerning to me that somebody like a Rick Wilson, who was he on Romney's team?
Mm-hmm.
Romney's team in 2012 was his campaign strategist or manager or whatever.
And that was a terribly run campaign.
Right, but here's a guy who took a look at Johnson and decided to recruit Evan McMullen and get behind him, and now they're winning Utah. What was it about Gary and his campaign that a Rick Wilson looked at and said, I think we'll just start over?
Gary doesn't, there's Gary. No strength. That's right.
It's yeah.
For when
yeah.
I look
command
at
presence
when
and leadership.
When I look at every candidate from Gary Johnson down to a local level, there's a certain meekness that every libertarian candidate exhibits. Okay.
It's like, an apologetic libertarian.
Every libertarian.
Yeah. Well, it's also everyone should know this already.
That doesn't work. People need
when
you're looking for a leader, they need someone that's strong, concise, and says this is what needs to happen. Gary doesn't inspire that. Our congressional candidates don't inspire that. They basically just flub around like this is how it should be. Like people don't want to hear like, what it should be. They want you to tell them what it should be. And Gary is really
or why the other side's wrong or the other people are wrong. That gets old because they laugh along in unison, but then they don't show up on election day. And then you're like, oh, I was a lot funnier back in.
Especially in this election, you could say, this is why he's wrong. This is why she's wrong. This is what I'm going to do.
And this is what the. Like, that's the thing is there's probably realistically 35 to 40% of the American electorate who haven't heard yet what they believe, who aren't represented
absolutely.
About their views.
I think it's even higher
and if you
that.
Do it in a command, a certainty, and you say, listen, this is what, look at the polling data. This is what we all believe, and this is what's achievable, and this is why I have the opportunity to do it because I'm not beholden to party. I can make the deals, and I can make the compromises, and have a new governing framework that's never existed in politics, and the years of gridlock can be over.
Right.
All you have to do is have the courage to not support Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, which you don't want to anyway.
They can't be afraid of not breaking the nap. Sometimes you got to break the nap, and as I
most people wouldn't even know what it is.
Yeah, like some of these candidates
don't know what it is. Yeah,
some of these candidates are like, I have to say, okay, like we have to be open borders because it's in our platform. But that is such an unpopular idea, and when you push that to a certain framework, I mean, you can sit there and say, okay, we have open borders if we end certain subsidies.
Pick your battles.
Are you electing me to dissolve the government immediately? Like,
yeah.
Hillary Clinton clearly believes in open borders,
absolutely.
And she is trying...
Because she's a corporatist.
Right, but she's not saying, I want open borders. She's pushing an ideology that is publicly acceptable and moves us towards that goal. Democrats believe in single-payer health care like in Britain and like in Canada, but they could never... It was too politically unpopular to come out and say that that's what they believe.
Americans
and so,
don't ever want to think they're socialists
right,
or liberals.
And so what they crafted was Obamacare, and guess what it was designed to do? Raise health care premiums...
so much.
Basically,
crash the
industry. Right. Basically, punish small business owners so small business owners cry uncle, kick people off of their insurance, move them towards... the exchanges.
Everyone
right
has
now.
To go through the exchange.
Crash the market. Lo and behold, we've got a crisis. We've got to fix this.
We need more money.
Right,
more
and
money.
We end up with
let
single
it,
payer.
Us, we,
these
we gotta
greedy this companies can. We have to keep. Why are we bailing out these greedy companies who keep raising your premiums? We should
right.
just do the public option for the American people.
Oh,
right. Somewhere there's a CEO at Anthem going kick kick kick.
Well, they
kick.
Have to know that they're zombies. The health insurance companies are zombies. It'll be a case where they have to consolidate and just get
it's
bigger and bigger and bigger,
now,
like the banks, in order to absorb the shocks from the increase in costs. Or else there's no not going to be any middle size or small size insurance companies. They'll never be able to take a bad year.
There
it will
be.
Put them out of business if they have a single bad year where their actuaries are off.
Right.
And so it's inevitable, like with the banking
within
system,
4 years.
Bigger and bigger and bigger so that it can absorb systemic shock, which really just means
it's going to be
their
bigger,
operating arms
of
the federal government.
Go ahead, Tyler.
And when it does crash, it's going to be a way bigger.
Right. It'll be end up being like the bailout, the auto bailout, is where the government will come in. They'll do capital injections. They'll control everything. And eventually they'll start saying what has to shut down, what doesn't, what's paid for, what isn't, until eventually it's just folded into Medicare.
Right. So a lot of what We Are Libertarians does is, and we're working on getting better at this, is taking a look at these existing issues and then building out, you know, solutions, libertarian solutions, and
a politically achievable,
politically achievable, and messaging them. And we're going to package that in some news. If you'd like to help do some research on this stuff, Greg and I are very busy, and we do our best to kind of keep up with everything, keep up with the news. But I wish I had 2 more hours a day just to sit and read, but we just don't have that time. So
2 more energetic hours.
Yeah. So if we had some folks out there who are willing to kind of help us research history and policy and everything,
alternatives to what American style and European styles are, because there's countries like who is it Hong Kong that has basically MediSave, where it's entirely income based. Like you basically get your government health insurance, but then how much you pay your premiums or how much you have to pay towards it is based on like real time earnings, because they have the IT systems in place where they can measure how much you've earned that year, and that's how much you'd contribute, rather like with our system where it's based off of last year's income, mm-hmm. which can screw you if you got laid off, if you're a sales rep and you're having a bad year, yep. you know, if your business is failing and the market's mm-hmm. changing. Like the technology exists in today's world to do things where it is a little bit more fair. I do. I mean, it's one of those things. Ideally, government can be used for good. It just isn't.
Absolutely.
Government can be a force of good, theoretically, just like anarcho-capitalism can be good, theoretically.
One at a time.
I'd rather them collect it, you know. Right.
Tyler is basically Doug from Black Jeopardy on Saturday Night Live this past week. So
watches Saturday Night Live.
It's great.
Tucks do. Yeah.
Basically, Black Jeopardy skit, they show that the Trump voter is
Alec Baldwin.
It's so much like, what? You threw me off. Stop.
See, I'm doing it.
You're flustering me.
Russell.
It basically is, all right, so Black Jeopardy, it's based on the premise that black people and Trump supporters are basically the same people, except with different color skins that don't like each other for no reason at all. And it's very well illustrated.
Elizabeth Banks did one, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I haven't stayed up with it. I didn't know that had become a staple.
Yeah, Mike, and Weekend Update is the best it's ever been. There was one Trump joke that was so dead on and funny. It was great. And I love.
Who's doing Weekend Update now?
It is Michael Shea, who I saw. If you ever have Michael Shea in your area doing a stand-up show, go see it. It was great. And Colin Jost, who's, okay. I think, the head writer now.
Is that who the head writer is now?
Yeah, really strong. Great. Saturday Night Live's doing really well.
They needed just new blood. It was just too many of the, you know.
Liberal.
It'd become like a union move-up system rather than merit.
So we're not trying to pick on Gary Johnson.
He was the right choice.
Absolutely. I will be voting for Gary Johnson. I'm proud of Gary Johnson. I think that they did the best that they could.
I think they got bad advice.
I think. And I think that the future, like, there's so much apocalyptic stuff. And, you know, you say, oh, well, this, you're right, that this election, had we done everything right, it could have trimmed off years, maybe decades of growth for the libertarian movement and the Libertarian Party. Those two are different, yet part of this, you know, the LP is part of the movement.
Riding the same wave.
But, you know, the LP is part of the movement, but the libertarian movement is also the think tanks and libertarian Republicans like
Liberty
Rand.
Caucus.
The Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
some of the Bernie people.
A lot of the Occupy people are, you know, they don't care about the economic stuff so much as the corporate welfare stuff.
But even if it feels like a missed opportunity, there will be a lot of people who will say, I first heard about the libertarian message from Gary Johnson, and I am now a libertarian. So there will be a lot of good out of this cycle. And I think that the future is very bright for libertarians. Every demographic shows that. And I think we just have to be better prepared. And we have to take a look at where we're at now and say, okay, well, let's look at Aleppo. That's the meme that has caught on. Anytime you mention on Facebook or at work anything about Gary Johnson, what does somebody say?
What, does he know what Aleppo is?
It doesn't matter if they're political or not. So how do you combat that? What structure in a campaign and a movement do you build that can then combat that? When you see these large Facebook groups or these Facebook pages that have millions of likes that yesterday are trying to spin the story that Gary Johnson and Bill Weld dropped out that they conceded the election, that they endorsed Hillary Clinton. It's you can start a Facebook page, link a bullshit blog post, and get 20,000 shares. How do we as a movement combat that?
I mean, it sounds like in 2017 they want to speak like Zuckerberg,
right?
Because they're going to get fucking nuked.
That's the problem. Is our instinct is to immediately point out what the other sides do wrong and say, "Well, look at how stupid they are too." That is the entire wrong way to do it. When Gary Johnson got caught on Aleppo, he did what he is an incredibly decent man and talked about how he made a mistake and wrote this wonderful apology that just showed you the kind of character he has. It doesn't. The right way to do it is to go find someone in America named Al Eppo and sit down with him for an hour and find out who he is and what he is as a person and run it and make it satire. Because once you're trying to explain or trying to point out to anyone else what, you know, well, they got it wrong too. Trump's an idiot too. They've quit listening and they're like, oh God, of course, you know, and especially when they're in the majority. But if you turn it into like Mitch McConnell, when Barack Obama at the correspondents' dinner said, I don't want to go sit down and have dinner with him. You go sit down and have dinner with him. Jesse Benton took him to a bar in D.C. in the Capitol Hill and had him sit there with two glasses of wine and his legs crossed, inviting him on Instagram and Twitter. And it was the first time that anyone considered Mitch McConnell likable in history. Like, it helped him win re-election. We've got to learn to not point to the other side, but to be like, oh, okay. We got to own it and make it funny.
Political satire is the quickest way to get these messages across. Look at I don't know if you guys are watching South Park, but South Park for a decade now has been leveling every societal and political institution with 30 minutes of well-executed satire. Donald Trump, as caricatured by Alec Baldwin, is devastating to Donald Trump, just as Tina Fey's Palin was. And Tina Fey didn't do anything but read exactly what Palin was saying.
She played it up a bit
in a funny way. Yeah, of course, that's part of satire. Yeah. There's a little caricature. But when Alec Baldwin is on Saturday Night Live in front of literally only maybe 2 million, 3 million people, this is what libertarians don't understand. Coming from a national media apparatus where I work at my day job, you don't understand how a small amount of people can make a big cultural change with very little. It takes very little to actually make something change. It just has to be well done, and that's the part where the libertarians always go wrong. So
there's something so truthful about those little nuggets that you can't stop their momentum.
Right. The instinct in the libertarians is to tear down Alec Baldwin and Saturday Night Live and say, that's not funny, why would you... It's like, no, we should be satiring ourselves and putting ourselves on equal footing with them.
The more serious you take yourself, the less people like you.
Right. So when Alec Baldwin says in front of 2 million people, I just don't think it's, you know, when Tom Hanks says, Mr. Trump, what are we in the media doing that makes you look bad? You're taking my words, you're taking my actions, and you're repeating them exactly as I said them. That's three sentences of devastation that aired to 2 million people.
And everyone had been thinking it.
That everyone goes, holy shit, that's Trump.
They just nailed it.
It's not media bias. These people that claim media bias are stupid. They're just quoting Trump as he is. So
there's media bias in that Hillary, for her actual actions, doesn't get held without grind.
100%.
But Donald Trump can't say that they actually could be a lot harder on him. They really could, but they know that then they won't have access. Yeah. And so they have to, you know, he's done a really good job at if you try to go after him, or if he doesn't like the way you've handled him, he has no fear walking away from you at all, because he knows that he's the rating. They watch for him, not because of Anderson
Cooper.
That
was one of the lines in the Weekend Update. Colin Jost goes, let me get this straight, Donald Trump. Washington Post, CNN, The New York Times, you're claiming media bias. You are the greatest thing that has ever happened to the media. They are praying. Who would they rather have elected? Would they rather have Hillary Clinton, who is boring as shit, or Donald Trump, who is basically a giant pumpkin-headed fart noise? I mean, there was something along those lines. It was much funnier than what I just said. But that again, four or five sentences, three sentences in Weekend Update makes you go, oh, media bias is bullshit. The media is rooting for Trump, and that's been a criticism. They early on aired which I'm in favor of, air speeches by the candidates in full. Let us listen to their words and let us make up their mind. What's happening now is these reporters, they have their own bias, so they edit according to the story, the narrative.
They truncate and create a narrative.
Right, and so it's like Jim Shella. One time Jim Shella, who's retiring, so long, Jim, now who will ignore the libertarians, except 95% of the population, but... you know, he, for a week on Twitter, had been talking about this rally that nutjob Melissa Donaghy had been putting on at the rally, the State House rally in 2011 or whatever. And for a week, he had been saying, you know, I just don't know what the point of this rally is. It's not clear, blah, blah, blah. He showed up, and all he did was get videotape, including of yours truly, that fit that narrative. He took 45 seconds of my cogent like statement that made sense. And what did he use? The 2 seconds at the end of my statement where I stuttered and said, well, people are fed up, and made me look like a total idiot and his narrative look great. Now, I've held that against Jim Shella forever, but what was I going to do about it? That's just how it is. You know, so what I did is I made sure to tell literally every single person that I knew what had happened and what was wrong with that piece. And here's why Jim Shella is not a credible reporter. Here is the statement. Here's what I said. And so, you know, and libertarians, I wasn't the first libertarian person to point out that he sucked. But that's an example of what they do. The media, Trump is right. The media has a narrative. You have to read the Podesta emails. I haven't read
through
all
of them. They have an audience that they have to sell to.
Right. And if you want to talk about how what we're up against and how the other guys do it, instead of sitting there getting pissed off about how Hillary has 19 people crafting a tweet and she lies, look at the process, examine the process, and then you craft your process, because clearly Hillary Clinton's process works, but make yours ethical. That's the awesome. My beef with libertarians is that for so long they hate power, they hate the concept of gaining power, they hate the tools of political science, they hate
the existing system,
the concept of institutions that give you power. And I for 10 years have said, no, we need power because we are best to hold that power, because we will do nothing with it. And
hopefully,
and we,
you got to get there first, though.
Yeah. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
And if
you were the chosen one, Anakin,
right? And we need to do it more ethically and be more open. But at the same time, we have to be successful. We have to build power, or else we are no one.
Otherwise, continue we're to sitting languish around waiting for the perfect afterlife.
Right.
You know, you become the, you know, the not the utopians, but you're basically martyrs.
We used to just go back to 4chan. We used to do operations called groundswells, and it was part of our raid tactics. And this is what's great about WikiLeaks, because this all ties into the same LulzSec, because it's the same Lizard Squad, the same
like Anonymous.
Yeah, we are Legion. And when we got that whole phrase, like, we are Legion, and, you know, we do not forget, we do not forget. And it was basically, it spawned during the Scientology issues when Tom Cruise went on the whole, like, jumping on the couch Scientology thing, where we decided to attack the Scientology church. So, we had protests, we had entire internet.
Crazy new.
We had IRC groups dedicated to, we call them sect, you know, LulzSec, InfoSec, as a parody of InfoSec, which is information security.
IRC groups are like AOL chat rooms, but for hackers, and they're anonymous.
Yeah, so we managed to sit there and basically send out, you know, spiders here, bots here, and we pull and crawled all this information, like the inner workings of the church, because no one really knows what goes on in the Scientology church. I mean, you know what it is. You see celebrities into it, but you know the whole
very guarded.
The whole the rituals and how they have to pay to play that works within the church.
You have to basically turn over all your assets to the church, and then they make sure that you're provided for at a subsistence level.
Yeah, all the abuses, like Anonymous uncovered that, and that was anonymous people on the internet. So when you look at the Podesta emails, especially with WikiLeaks, and no matter how much Clinton tries to say it's Russia or how it's any other foreign country, it's not Russia. We know it's not Russia, because I was explaining to Chris earlier, and I'll explain to people on the podcast how IT works, because what they say on the news is incorrect. When a hack occurs, you really can't pinpoint the hack because they're between like 5 or 6 layers of a Tor network. They're behind a proxy. So while they might be in Kansas, it shows up they might be in China, they might be in Poland, they might be anywhere else in the world because that's not their true IP address. Everything is spoofed. The only time hackers get caught is, I use an example, the Harvard student. A guy in Harvard used the Harvard network and used a Tor to basically cloak his IP address to make bomb threats to the school. The only reason he got caught is because the administrators of the IT Security Council at Harvard managed to see who logged on to Tor at that specific time, and there were only 15 people that were logged on. So once he saw a correlation between these 15 people logged on Tor that made the bomb threat from this IP address, they just drifted it down to the time of the posting, which was like 1 or 2 people, and they found the guy.
Mm-hmm. Process of elimination.
Yeah, when you're 7 billion people in the world and most of them are connected to the internet, you can't pinpoint a correlation attack like that. Like,
the data size is too big.
No one knows it's Russia. Like, because if a company can't tell which other company is hacking them, you can't tell if foreign nations hacking you. So the reason they're saying it's Russia is because it's politically convenient, because
Donald Trump's already been more complimentary of Vladimir Putin.
It sounds much more menacing if Putin in the Kremlin is hacking you than some 20-year-old Serbian that watches fucking anime in a basement hacking.
Right, like Guccifer 2.0 or Guccifer 2.0. I
mean, the Joker, there's tons of people that have done this. BitByte and all these other hackers that kind of like broke these systems, even on days like phone phreaking. You really couldn't tell until like there's a correlation attack. So, you know, as these internet groups operate to this like standard where, you know, we sit there and we pull information that's not easily obtainable, the media panics about that. Like, when you look at CNN, like, well, only we can report that. MSNBC starts running these Russian stories. They're freaked out because they're not controlling the access to the information. When it's so easy because your entire society is so interconnected that you can pull and hack and crack information, disseminate it, put dead man triggers where, like, if
there's no bottleneck on it.
They're the gatekeepers. Yeah, they have no control anymore.
Yeah, so like when Anonymous was doing all this, when we were doing all this stuff in 4chan, all these raids.
When you say we and then Anonymous, you're no longer Anonymous.
It's a term. It's a term we use.
I'm speaking of them as someone else.
It's just a general term.
It's the
4chan, everybody's Anonymous. You don't have a name on there, so they're all, that's what you call yourself.
My username C Spangle. Is that a problem?
Yeah, you're a trip fag.
Yeah.
What?
People that use names as opposed to the anonymous handle are called trip fags because it's, you're using a triple name to say, I'm not anonymous, this is what I am. So we'll make fun of you for that because you actually took time to register. But
get the fuck out, Spangle.
As we look at these correlated attacks.
Not welcome again. Story of my life.
Not even allowed on 4chan.
Nope.
That's rock bottom.
I mean, like, if the government does not get a control on the internet and, like, tighten it down like China does and cut international cables like that, like, the problem of hacking and getting information is going to escalate, especially after Clinton or Trump wins an election with the information pouring out. Because all it takes is one guy that's ticked off to leak that information to hackers, leak passwords to get that information, and it gets disseminated. It doesn't matter if CNN doesn't report it, because it's going to get shared on 4chan. Absolutely. From 4chan, it gets shared on Reddit. When it gets on Reddit, it gets on Dig. When it gets on Dig, it gets into every single Facebook comment that ever posts that dislikes this person. So what started as like a one hack within 5 hackers just fucking around the server turns out to be 300 million people viewing it through different media channels. That they'll probably believe that because it makes sense. Because when it hits that level, then the news is going
to
report out.
They have to.
It was like last night with the most recent WikiLeaks dumps for Hillary Clinton. Absolutely. And that, you know, clearly that Bill Clinton's personal income is intertwined with the donations from the Clinton Global Initiative.
Yeah, the WikiLeaks.
People don't understand it, though. People can't conceptualize why that's important. That's why it isn't having the impact, I don't think, on the election it should.
Because nobody is explaining it. Because here's what's happening. If you read The Economist, if you read The Washington Post, if you read The New York Times, if you read Clinton Cash, you understand exactly. What Clinton Cash did was brilliant. They put out a graphic novel, and it took me an hour to read at Barnes & Noble. I didn't pay for it.
I didn't pay for it.
True libertarian fashion, I ain't paying for it.
They put out an hour-long documentary, and not enough people watch it. You know who watches it? People in their own echo chamber. What doesn't happen, the reason it doesn't go viral is because it isn't a sex scandal. It isn't pussy grabbing. It isn't
like Colin Powell said, still dick and bimbos.
It isn't easily mockable on Saturday Night Live. It isn't the people that make this anti-Trump shit and Aleppo shit viral are liberal leaning. They're college-educated whites, generally, or college-educated minorities.
They're tea-sipping neckbeards.
Right. And they have the they're my peers who understand Adobe Creative Cloud fully and can produce a two-minute viral video.
They love Avett Brothers and Starbucks Wi-Fi.
That's unfair.
The memes are so dank.
But that's where the alt-right has become a powerful force, is that they have the ability to create memes. They have the ability to create quick viral videos. The problem is they're supporting a cause that to the majority of the population sounds racist as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about is, how do you take the Clinton emails and put it into a two-minute viral video? You do it with political satire, and it has to be good. That's why if you're Remy from Reason, everybody knows who that is, because he's like the only one who does those kind of, you know. It's why the Hayek versus Mises rat, or was it Hayek v.
Mises, or no, Hayek Keynes.
Economic rat battle. That's why every libertarian knows it, because it's funny and creative, and somebody put $10,000 into production and made a viral video that taught people about who this was, and more people saw that than have read End the Fed, I promise you, by Ron Paul.
It's funny. And it's funny to think about this, is if you look at what 4chan is and you think about what these alternative websites, 4chan is essentially the heart of conservatism. And that's funny to say, because it's a it's a weeaboo website for you to look at anime pictures. But the thing is, when Greg makes a meme with the Pepe, or Tyler shares a meme with the Pepe, or a Spurdo meme, or May May if you're Joe Ruiz in his parallel dialect.
El Meme.
El Meme. But when you share those are actually really old 4chan memes that they were dropped like 6-7 years ago. But because of Poll, which is a board that's about 3 or 4 years ago that was added for political discussion, and kind of
politically incorrect. Yep. It's 4chan.org/POL/.
I love when people get upset. Yeah. Politically incorrect.
That whole alt-right momentum is not because of Trump, because people like to think it's Trump that caused the alt-right. No, it's all these disaffected, grumpy 20-something-year-olds that like to shit post on 4chan from Poll that caused the alt-right. So when they're sharing all these 4chan memes, they're saying stuff like Keck. Like, people, I've watched Greg's the Keck. I said Keck is from World of Warcraft from 2004, when you were an orc and you typed LOL. Because it didn't want the factions to talk to each other, it jumbled up the words for you. Mm-hmm. It came out as Keck. Mm-hmm. So when people on 4chan saw that, because they also play video games, Keck became another thing for LOL. So mm-hmm. now you see Keck going out. So it's
like Shibboleth for Christians.
Yeah. And that's the power of the internet. It's like one little politically incorrect board where it's just a bunch of like storm faggots just talking about Nazism all day. Yeah.
There you go again.
What? They are.
That's what it's called. I'm using the term.
Okay.
Bundle of sticks.
Right.
Yeah. There was no vowels in that.
Yeah. Word. It's. That's how.
FGTS.
People underestimate how powerful the internet actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And when a frog meme or a word like Keck is so profound that I can go to any conservative group in Facebook and I can see that Pepe meme, I can see the Spurdo memes, I can see people talking Keck, I can see Aaron Ewart fucking shit posting on Facebook all day. I know that that's also from the internet. Like, Aaron wouldn't be Aaron without the internet. If Aaron was just like a normal, like, this is Becky, this is my truck, these are my kids, he'd probably be chewing tobacco, drinking Budweiser at a bar. But because of the internet, he's sitting there posting 4chan memes and living in like 14 hours a day posting memes.
Right.
So
being a terrible father, terrible husband.
So as I watch this media, as it collapsed, the new wave of media is not these people.
Right.
It's not.
It's what comes it's from the this. Internet.
It's people searching out what... the full news story.
They want something that makes them laugh.
Well, it's not even that. It's just people searching for what's actually going on. Because I watch the news occasionally. I don't even have TV in my house. I just get everything from online. And
you go to McDonald's and log on your phone. No, don't lie to me.
It's more current and up to date, especially if something's happening. You'll get the raw, unfiltered news that you don't get on TV from the internet.
You're all 4chan
from Twitter
now.
And everything. Yeah, 4chan, you're all whatever. 4chan
here's what I would say to you kids out there if you want to make a difference. It is certainly important to have a substantive background. You've got to have the information if you want to give an opinion. But instead of spending $35 a month on, your eighth Rothbard book, spend $35 a month on lynda.com.
Just log on 4chan.
And go on lynda.com. And like, I was on lynda.com for 2 hours today learning how to do some stuff in Adobe Premiere Pro, which is which is a video editing, you know, get an Adobe Creative Cloud, learn how to podcast, learn how to shoot and edit video. Video is the most powerful and most marketable thing. Proprietary video. If look at Julie Borowski. Julie got a $150 lighting kit, a $500 camera, and went to town. Just with some creativity, she created a brand and influenced a lot of people by just doing some basic video editing and learning a little bit about creative work and doing it in a fun and interesting way. It also helps that she is adorable. That's why we don't do as much video.
Well, you know,
we have great voices.
I wouldn't have put her on the camera like that.
Right. We have tolerable voices.
Right.
No, I mean, I think kids today should also learn how to shitpost. Like, it's as funny as it sounds.
I think that comes inherently, doesn't it?
Well, no, like a lot of kids just don't know how to shitpost. They take things seriously. And when you're
That's why you don't like Roger, isn't it? It's that Roger takes, that's why you don't like Bittner. They take things too seriously.
The thing with the shitpost is you can take a filter off. You can have funny discussions. And when you're not in a serious where I have to be defensive and offensive in a capability where it's like, this is what I have to do. I have to defend my viewpoints. I have to assault your viewpoints. When you can just sit there and say, I don't have to engage in a discussion where I'm constantly playing a round of like knights of, you know, jousting with my opponent. You can get more accomplished simply because you can have legitimate conversations with people that roll down. Like, we're in the group chat, you know, we're just shit posting all day. Boom, here's a meme. Here's, this is what we're saying. But eventually it rolls around to like an intelligent discussion. So it brings people into a discussion by being somewhat more relatable. And it's just basically people that are capable of shit posting tend to like draw more fun. That's why you got 21,000 likes, because you're a great shit poster.
Sure. That's why we shit post for 20 minutes on the show, is so that you get to know who Greg, myself, and the other characters that come on the show. You get to know a little bit about them. You can relate to them personally, and then you get to hear our opinions. And if you don't like that, fast forward the first 20 minutes. It's always about 20 minutes of shit posting, and then we give you an hour and a half of opinion and a little shit posting in between. I mean, and because
just a little, man, just
right?
A little.
Because that's what works. That's what's worked for us. You know, you can do what Roger does, which is, you know, introduction, fact, and that's great. There's an audience for that, you know. But I think that people want a little humor. They want a little personality.
We'd have never made it.
Yeah,
we'd have both just been so tired of it. We'd have never followed through.
If it weren't fun to come and do this.
We'd had no interest whatsoever.
Every week. I mean, it's hard enough, and it's a, trust me, it is tough to get together at this point because we've just gotten busier and busier, and, you know, our personal and professional commitments have grown.
Yeah.
But we make a point to do this because it's fun.
It's important.
It's important to us, and we know it's important to you guys because you tell us. Like, if we miss a week, people are on my ass. And you have no idea how much I appreciate that and how motivating that is to make sure that we stick to a regular schedule. That's why if you look at 2016, we're going to be at about 52 episodes versus last year where we were at about 40.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year, there was a lot of emotional trauma, but that's a different story. So,
that's what makes shit posting so great. You can just let all the trauma out. Yeah,
that's right. I take my trauma.
Online. No one's really getting hurt. Just unplug.
I just want to see the you're at a precipice in time when internet culture is completely consuming everything that is used to be old media. It used to be old politics.
Right.
It's just funny.
Like Wolf Blitzer will be saying keck any minute now.
Yeah, it's like I just imagine like Bill O'Reilly being like, you know, on the no spin zone and be like, is it yes or no? Did you tell her keck? Did you say keck to her, you know? But it's as this consumes and you watch all this stuff die, you're watching two
it's an innovative
highly era. Unpopular candidates because of what young people on the internet think of them. It's not, you know, it's not like the 40-year-old dad or like the 60-year-old grandma being like, well, I gotta vote for Clinton because she's my girl, or Trump is gonna make sure that wall's built. Like, a lot of the commentary, a lot of like the hate and the vitriol and basically saying, you know, fuck this, it comes from an internet age. People that lived and were raised on the internet. So people sit there and make a joke about it. You're all connected on a smartphone. You can just sit there and just text where you want 140 characters.
They're both getting called on their bullshit, and everybody's like, well, neither one of these turds are
you know,
who we want.
As this generation raises up, you know, people are raised on the internet with instant access to information. And
it's now to a point where if there's not shit posting in the information, then people won't consume it.
Yeah, if I don't drop at least like four racial slurs, no one reads my comments. You know, it's like,
and it's all about attention.
Scroll right through them. Huh?
That's why I'm perfectly suited for this new media environment. I love attention. I love two things. I love two things, Greg. You know what they are?
I do.
I love attention, and I love
cats.
Pussy. Cats.
Cats and those blue water bottles.
Oh, I love those blue water bottles, man.
Aggressive hydration.
I have a 30. I up my game. I have the 32-ounce Nalgene bottles. This particular model is 6 years old.
It's sweating profusely.
That's because it was cold water in there. And I went to Target, and I got a 48-ounce.
Is that your Alex Jones plug?
Go get it. It's on the bottom shelf of the fridge.
Is it fluoride-free water?
Are you sure that wasn't like one of the refills, like the gallon?
No, this
like
is
a Brita water.
It is like this is the perfect size. This 32-ounce, it's unwieldy. All
right,
right this 48. No, that's a gallon jug. It's on the bottom shelf on the right there of the fridge. The fridge, yeah. It's right. And so, listen, you've got to drink. I drink a gallon of water a day. It's why I look so healthy.
You're plugging water containers from Target.
$10. Isn't this?
I've never seen your skin more glowing.
Look at this. Is this? This is not. This is ridiculous. So
that's like if a single girl had a cucumber, I would have questions.
No, this is not even cucumber. This is NBA player size. I mean, this is ridiculous. Why don't you get a? We'll post a photo of me and my water bottles to the Instagram. So listen, stay hydrated, people. You don't want to get kidney disease or stones or whatever.
Control what you can control.
Right. Water makes you feel so good. It makes you feel so healthy. Y'all got to get on WeAreLibertarian.com and you got to drink water right now.
Now, is that filtered? You don't want the globalist poisoning your water supply.
No, I have a pure filter. Okay, I don't have like any of the prepper filters or anything. Should I go prepper?
You're not doing it right. Absolutely. Right. What's wrong with filtering your water?
If you're just going to use this for dicks, aren't you?
No. Yeah, I haven't done that in a while.
You're totally getting double fisted right now.
I'm holding two large tubular objects.
No, I'm probably going to use it for something on Black Instagram like I did earlier this week.
Oh, hell no.
That was my first attempt at doing Black Instagram with you, and it seemed to take off and be pretty well.
Listen, that's a new meme. Forget your Bad Luck Brian's and your advice animals. You've got to go full Black Instagram, which is basically you just tweet out an image, and then you enlarge your image, and then just screenshot, post to Instagram, bing, bang, boom. All right, kids, let's wrap this one up.
Yes.
James talked about how WikiLeaks may or may not be tied to Russia, but probably not. It's all bullshit.
I'd say it's NSA if I had to bet.
Yep. So
it's fucking Serbs. They're fucking all like Kosovo, Serbia.
I don't know. If I were Hillary Clinton, I would leak it myself.
Yeah. There's really
no press outlets. Like the way it's being handled, no one is ever mentioning the validity of it. They're just talking about that it was a leak. How many times have you heard an analyst or one of the commentators say, this is actually true?
Yeah. Well,
it's more like alleged.
All they do is get boners for that. Watergate leaks.
They crafted a brilliant narrative, and here's how it happened. It was on the circus and on my favorite political TV show. It's on MSNBC at 6 p.m. It's also on Bloomberg Politics. It's with Mark Halperin and John Heilman. It's called With All Due Respect. It's like the PTI of politics. It's on MSNBC at 6, but it's not crazy liberal. It's just very informative. They're the guys who do the circus on Showtime, which is awesome. Bloomberg Politics is always great. And they basically what happened is when they got hacked, they hired the DNC hired this firm, and the firm basically just told them what they wanted to hear, which was that it's Russians. And the New York Times just did this big piece, and they really got a scoop by going and talking to the security firm that basically said it was Russia. And the New York Times digital editor, the securities network guy, he's like 65 years old. He doesn't know. I mean, there's no real way for the New York Times to verify that Russia stole this stuff and then to verify that they gave it to WikiLeaks. They're just using this source, which is a company that the DNC pays. So the media has just bought that narrative hook, line, and sinker, and that feeds into Trump's narrative of it's a rigged election, the media is against me. When the media doesn't report what's in the emails, when the Clinton people verified that these that they've been hacked. I mean, it's this is clearly their emails. They're all talking about it. They're all embarrassed.
They're preying on your ignorance. Mm-hmm. Okay,
right.
Like you know how to work a computer. You know how to get on Facebook. You know right. how to do all that shit. How much do you know about the internal workings of how like IP addresses work, how proxies work, how torrents work?
Harry came and set up my internet. I don't know how my internet works now.
Right.
There's some computer, and I've got an access point, and there's a switch server. Thing. They're like, I don't know what the fuck is going on in my own house.
Yeah, but like you know,
and I'm a digital director. That's my title.
That's how ignorant some people are technology. People who use technology, well, but they don't understand right the fundamentals. And there's no IT person alive that believes that's Russia. In fact, if some help desk person came to me, I'm like, why are the files missing? And he's like, well, it could have been the fucking Russians. I'm like, you could have been going to the unemployment office, get the fuck out of my office. Because that's the worst answer you could ever give me. Because there's no validity that you could prove it's Russia because of how torrents. That's such a... Even then, every fucking firewall that we put in, SonicWall, Cisco, Barracuda, we block... stands. We block Afghanistan. We block Kazakhstan. We block Russia. We block China. Everything
seems kind of racist.
Blocked through those firewalls because
they know where the bad hombres are coming
it's
from.
It's just because people believe that Russia and North Korea is hacking you all the time.
Yep.
So we block those ports automatically every time a firewall comes out. It's the default setting to block those servers. So when she says Russia, she doesn't know it's Russia. They're just assuming it's Russia because it's a great talking point for the media when you're hyping up a war.
And it's all absolutely. It's all proxy war with Syria and everything else that's going on.
WikiLeaks was never Russians. WikiLeaks
well,
has
10 years
been...
ago, WikiLeaks was great or whatever when
right.
they were exposing all the Bush war crimes and everything
right.
else that was going on. But now it's, oh, you know.
Yeah,
it's our girl.
It's because they're ramping up a war in Syria. They're already had a conflict with Russia over airspace.
Yep.
This is a great way for them to say when she wins, she can go there in 2017 to the Congress and does her State of the Union that we're going to tighten internet security, that we're going to secure like you know our foreign bases because of a Russian threat. And that's just her wanting to push a silly foreign policy thing that she knows might get her votes because people are somehow scared of the former Soviet Union.
Man.
It's Putin.
When Russia isn't even close to where we're at.
I mean, Russia does
militarily.
Present a threat.
Yeah.
It takes... an EMP, we need like 4 to 5 EMPs for to hit certain cities. You knock out the entire power grid.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you knock out a power grid is you don't have to worry about a nuclear strike where radiation spills
or
over.
Anything.
With the EMP is people in large cities, people in the rural states
chaos.
Will be fine, but people in large cities, 95% mortality rate.
Yeah.
Because within a week, all the food supplies and supermarkets will dry up and there's no available arable land. You hit an EMP in winter, they think it's like a nuclear holocaust. No, an EMP will knock out the entire western coast. So, you know, she's building this up and she's sitting there trying to make it into a foreign policy thing that we need to sit there and be tough on China. We need to be tough on Russia. Well, why not be tough on Russia? Because Russia is trying to move into the Crimea. Where it's a new foreign power moving into a port that the United States wants their own allies and territories. So she's sitting there blustering to sit there and make some stupid foreign policy point when she knows, when every person in the IT community knows that it's a goddamn Serbian hacker or some Polish hacker or some UK hacker.
Some 300-pound guy
or
in
some,
his basement.
Or some dude in Denver, high as a fucking kite, sitting there punching random IP addresses and DDoSing a server.
Yep.
You know, it irritates me because people don't understand it and they promote that ignorance to people that don't understand IT, which is 2016, at least understand how firewalls work and how proxies work. But I don't know. I would fire anybody that said it's Russia, that's why we're missing files. In fact, I would fire you so fucking hard, I would kick you out with security and RFID you out the door.
Well, 3 years ago, I didn't think there was anything even important on these emails, so what the hell did even matter?
No, it's when they're talking about these emails, it's just silly blustering. It's people that don't understand. And I can't explain it to enough. I can't explain to a 40-year-old person that thinks the only thing on the internet is Firefox.
And porn.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, James, but I run into, you know, having baby boomer bosses, a lot of times what you run into is in the early days of the internet, there was a lot of paranoia about us. You know, I was 13 when we got the internet. Well, your kids are going to get raped and abducted.
What was your first porn site?
Whitehouse.com. Because I was a nerd and we'd had the internet.
It wasn't Meatspin?
No. Although meatloaffarts.com did come later. So I get on whitehouse.com to look up some presidential information because I was a nerd and it was 1993 and I was really into
your
politics.
Librarian told you not to go there and you went there anyway.
Well, no, I got on whitehouse.com because
on an Apple II?
I didn't know what whitehouse. It was a Gateway. 256 megabits of RAM.
Oh, goddamn, Gateway is a great computer.
Yeah, 1993, 256.
Bringing a tear to my eye.
Yeah. And so I get on there, and it is a guy in a Bill mask railing a girl in a Hillary mask from behind, and a very crude GIF.
Kyle Paxton made that my mom's home screen on her computer in my basement.
And my mom walks in at that moment and goes, "Huh? God damn it, Mike. I told you we shouldn't get this internet. He's looking at pornography." And I was like, "No, I was just trying to look up the history of the presidents." It was whitehouse.gov. So,
common mistake.
Yeah, that was my first porn site.
You learned about domain.
My next porn site was as many photos of Cindy Crawford as I could find. And
Ask Jeeves.
I was a goddamn Library of Congress research level, full scale operation trying to find nudes of Sarah Michelle Gellar and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Damn.
So you loved I Know What You Did Last Summer, didn't you?
It was a magical time for my penis and I.
I wasn't a celebrity.
Ryan Felipe?
Like, yep.
I went straight to the hardcore
Wild Things.
I think the first porn site I ever looked at was when Ask Jeeves was like a search engine, right?
Right.
And I'm like 13. I'm wearing like orange khaki shorts and whatever.
Heelys?
Yeah, and like, I just remember going to Jeeves. It's like, you can search anything on Jeeves. Ask Jeeves anything. And I'm like,
dogpile.
I'm like, busty Asian chick. Boom, image search. I'm like, god damn. So my dad's like passed out drunk in the bedroom. I'm just bang, bang,
that explains
bang,
a lot.
And you know, busting my first nut scared the shit out of me. I swear to God, dude, I thought I broke my dick. I was like, what? I'm going,
why is it spitting at me?
Oh my God.
I was at my grandparents' house and they had Cinemax and I was watching this softcore and something happened and I was like, oh my God, what happened? So you 13-year-old boys out there listening, it's okay. It's
but
normal.
They won't ever know the horrors of trying to beat it, time up your jerk to the scrambled porn.
Oh.
Oh, then when AIM came out, and like it's like instant messaging chat had every girl from school on that AIM, dude. I was like, hey, what up? It's like going in their DMs like back in like 97.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So like, you know what? They always have like the like away messages, like, oh, like with the colors and shit. And I'd be like, yo, Cindy, it's James. It's like, I'm having a party at my dad's, made a gravity bong out of milk jug. You want to come over? And, like, you know, get high that way on AIM. But I swear, like, I still have my AIM list. When I download Trillin, I could see it. And it's just like a wall of people I slain in like my dad's basement. Was just like, I remember that. I lasted 2 seconds with that one. You know, just going through the list. I'm like,
My first girlfriend was a girl from Martinsville, and which is 30 minutes south of
was
where
it
we
Becky?
Were. At. It was not Becky.
Okay.
Miss Becky.
And I thought it was the greatest thing ever. It was 10th grade, and hey, what's up? Nothing.
Oh, dude.
How's your day? Good.
Do you remember like the chat rooms, like the
ASL?
Chat rooms? Oh my fucking god!
Dude. Yeah.
Man, like, I even in my mind, I know it's a 40-year-old dude I'm talking to, but like, I just really want to get off right now. Like, I will pretend that you're a 15 female from California.
I want to talk to a hot Asian female from Nashville.
Have you ever seen Out Cold?
No.
The movie Out Cold is one of Zach Galifianakis' first movie in Jason London.
No.
There's a scene, it's a wonderful scene, where there are two guys in a lesbian chat room and they're in the same town talking back and forth to each other, which is basically what I imagine AIM was for all of us as young men.
Then when MySpace came out with all those emo girls off MySpace, the scenes, like, you know, like the fucking hair and the bow and the rawr and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And dude, like MySpace, I swear, me and my friend were like in my room and we're just like, dude, what are you going to do today? It's Friday. We got nothing to do. It's like, well, my cousin got me like a bottle of Arenado's tequila, and I'm like, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna sit here on MySpace, click on every profile that says the like the little online thing that put out the little signals and stuff. Be like, just hit her up, dude. She got a friend, hit her up. Cool, she's down. Meet us at the park. You know.
Did you ever have the party chat rooms? It was basically like voicemail on steroids.
Uh-uh. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. The party chat lines, and me and my friends got hooked up with some group of girls in Michigan. And would like leave each other filthy voicemail messages when we were like 14, I remember. I will forever remember this one that I will not describe because I'm trying to change my ways. But it, I became late. A man that day. I became a man.
From Michigan?
Some girl from Michigan. Yep.
Interesting.
Gentlemen, I've got a roll. I've got a basketball tip off.
All right. Yeah, should we wrap it up?
All right. Yeah. Final thoughts for the episode. Tyler Weiss.
I think it was pretty enlightening, and we got some shit posting in. We've got some election coverage. I think
we got
pretty
some
good.
Beaten off.
Yeah. I think we full
explained how WikiLeaks and like why it's not from Russia, or how we couldn't actually prove it if it was.
Yeah.
Nice filled it in a succinct way.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't have got anywhere else.
Nope.
In true Nisian fashion.
Listen, dog. James Nice, final thoughts.
I think this was a good episode. Like, we just spent like 20 minutes talking about like masturbating on the internet back when like AIM was the thing. I mean, any podcast that ends with nostalgia like that, because there ain't a dude alive that hasn't logged on to AIM hoping that girl sitting there is not away, or hasn't logged on MySpace and been like, damn, she's got like this really fine ass fucking bangs.
Video porn when it first came out in like 2003.
Oh, yeah.
2.5 hours for a 30-second clip.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bro.
Mom,
I'm still downloading that Pam and Tommy tape. What was that? Napster.
95. Yeah. 95. It just, you know.
LimeWire.
The photo would
load.
Mom's
like, I got to get it on the phone.
The photo would load and it boop.
Yep.
Boop.
You're like,
boop. I got a titty. I got a titty.
Oh, I came before I even saw a nipple. And then you got all the way down, and I was like, oh, she had like a strapless bra on. You're like, damn it.
Yeah, pretty entertaining.
Waste of time.
Pretty entertaining episode. A lot of, like, cacks, and then we, going on an internet rant because people.
You dropped an N-bomb pretty early on.
Yep.
I mean, you gotta start strong. I mean, if you're going to shitpost this podcast, either go hard or go home.
Go hard or go home.
I mean, it's going to be bleeped out.
You went full David Duke.
I mean, are you streaming this live?
Oh, fuck no. I'm not streaming live when you're here, yeah. Especially not now ever.
I just wait for the, like, and then they called her a beep, beep, beep. It's like, what did you say?
Technical difficulty.
What did you say? I just said that he's a cuck. But no, like, I think it's a good one. It's always good to, especially because you guys do like several serious ones in a row with some, like, you know, smart people.
We need to do one. I want to do one with Nice. I think it'd be fun to do one that flushes out all the variations and strains of libertarianism.
Oh, it's fucking ANCAP. Which one's anarcho-syndicalism
and or mutualism? Like, you know, libertarian socialism.
Heaven or helicopter? We'll call it that.
Base topper.
No, it's like I was telling, like, in that chat sometimes. I think what would help this podcast a lot is if we do a lot of like interest. You know, we talk about politics a lot. I come in every now and then. We do more of these every now and then. But, you know, you definitely branch it on different things. We talked a lot about computer hacking today. That's not really. It's definitely a political theme, but it's definitely something that's different than.
Well, it's relevant now because now, you know, it's. The fact that it was a leak has questioned the validity of something that should be way more impactful. Absolutely. In a presidential election.
I mean, people like,
oh, they edited the leak.
Right, they're acting like it's lunchroom gossip rather than fact.
Right, no news outlet talks about the leaks and what was in the leaks without tying it to Russia and
compromised validity.
CNN even said it was illegal to view them because they were stolen. Right. Like, what the fuck?
Just
are you doing
not even
that?
Remotely
do
true.
Do you even internet?
Yeah. Right.
All I can say about that is, like, if you like talking about hacking, just like Stone Cold Steve Austin said, give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Greg.
No, I've enjoyed it.
What the fuck?
I would have never thought that we'd have a Stone Cold reference. Stone Cold E.T.
That's what you never know. That's why.
Wanna have me some cheeseburgers? The Texas rattlesnake.
Can I get a hell?
Yeah. When Nice came in to the party in 2010,
I'm going to drink a beer. I'm going to drink another beer.
Sam Goldstein couldn't try to get rid of him quick enough. And I was like, no, he is the future.
He's a mad genius.
He's a mad genius. We need him for the keks.
Mm-hmm. I just dropped a Stone Cold reference. I mean, like, there's got to be like some like 30-year-old dude like listening to this podcast who's like has a Stone Cold shirt on.
Come back.
He comes back all the time. Like, it's great because, like, out of any wrestler, no one has a bigger pop. Like, you know, when Hulk Hogan comes out, like, yay, it's Hulk. Or it's like The Rock comes out, like, yay, it's Dwayne. But, dude, when you hear that fucking glass shatter,
I know.
It's like, bah, nah, 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 and people are
dude,
like,
that was my middle school experience. I was so stone cold.
We need to get a gif of him clapping.
We do. Wait, didn't he? What was was it? The very first Spangle meme I remember that was a paint meme by Nice was you yelling at the 500 in front of the Twin Towers, and then you, I think, Stone Cold stunning somebody or being Stone Cold.
No, the
Hulk leg drop
right.
was in it as well. The Hollywood right. Hogan leg drop.
Between him and I. So
I laughed so hard because it was the shit meme before shit memes were cool.
He went into MS Paint and he had the Twin Towers exploding and it was a Hulk drop. And I was in front cheering it.
It was the first real like meme I remember.
Maybe one of my favorite Spangle memes of all time is the meme that Nice did of me where he dressed me up like some sort of like anime kitty. And it said, I just want to be left alone to do my photo art.
there's a legend. See you, memes. Dude.
See you, Tyler.
See you, Tyler.
See you, Tad Western.
But yeah, all
right. Good luck.
Fuck, let's just do a
go
whole...
Go drop some J's.
Let's just do a whole show on Stone Cold Steve Austin. We could talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin's career, about how he made the fucking 90s great again. I mean, like, between him and Nirvana, it's...
Dude, wrestling in our middle school years, up until the very, like, my freshman year, I still remember 7th grade Halloween dance, the Rec Night dance. I was, I was... Scott Steiner and Jeff Newland was Buff Bagwell, Big Papa Pump, and Buff Bagwell, NWO. It was amazing.
This is what I'll do. I should run for vice chair of the Libertarian Party, and like my interest would be the Stone Cold thing. I'll just come Stone Cold, whoever's running against me, dude. Just come out like fucking bearded.
Hit him with the stunner.
Yeah, just fucking go up down the podiums, just do it.
Van Hook, Brandon Van Hook has some very embarrassing Spangle videos of me like doing wrestling. I mean, did you and your friends do wrestling?
Are you kidding me? Yeah. I once took Patrick Sabo and did the tombstone, the Undertaker tombstone onto a cement floor because he wouldn't shut up. And Dwayne Gibbs, as soon as like he was done, Dwayne Gibbs came flying off the couch and hit him with the people's elbow. It was amazing.
We Van Hook and Nate Zupan and Matt Gillette, it got elaborate. Like we turned of the bedrooms into a whole wrestling ring, and I had an intro to Led Zeppelin. It was amazing.
Well, then N64 came out, and they had the wrestling game.
Yeah,
and so it would just turn into night, like entire nights where it was like, yeah, you want to go to the football game, and it'd be like. No, I don't. Like, I'd really rather do this, and then we'll reenact it and get the pay-per-view on Sunday, and it'll be epic.
Gillette and Brandon, they never played the game. All they did was go and create us as characters in the game, and, like, Matt is not a genius at much, but when it comes to creating his friends in WWE wrestling video games... He's a true artist. I mean, it looked exactly like
us. And that was the WWF, WCW days. Like, when you had Nitro and then Monday Night Raw, and then Eric Bischoff came out with Hulk Hogan on WCW and NWO for the first time, you're like, my world's blown. And then the one time the Ultimate Warrior came back for that one night on Nitro, it was the greatest experience of my adolescence.
Wrestling likes to shit post, because I watched wrestling like 2 nights ago, when it's just weak. The Attitude Era from like the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm like, that was just like... It's like whoever was making the story plot lines of that was on crack cocaine. It's like, we should have like a funeral, but instead the Kane comes in and fucks the corpse. And then like Stone Cold Steve Austin comes in with a goddamn beer truck. And
a Zamboni.
Yeah.
Yes. You drove a Zamboni and you're like, this is arguably the greatest thing I mean, he was Trump before it was cool. Like in wrestling, he would just up the ante over and over and over. He Stone Cold stunned Santa Claus and people cheered and loved it. Like, forget Santa. Austin 316.
Hands down, he's more popular than Hulk Hogan. Like if there were two wrestlers to come out and like, because you judge who's popular based on the pop when the initial song comes on, like everybody is okay with everybody else. Like John Cena comes out, like, oh man, it's John Cena, but there's no fucking entrance music that gets people more fucking hyped, drunk, and fighting in the audience than fucking Stone Cold.
Now it's because of scarcity, I think, too. But
I mean, those are great
for my
years.
Money, Mick Foley.
Oh my God.
And I met him a couple times at work.
Mankind was like legitimately scared me when he first came on the scene.
Genuinely the nicest man you will ever meet in your life. Can barely walk.
Dude, he was Dude Love.
Dude
and then
Loved,
Mick
Cactus
James,
Jack.
Cactus Jack. And that was the ECW days.
And man, when the cage matches, and so one of the other on-air guys and I were sitting there, we were talking to him, and he's like, yeah, me and my friends did cage matches, and like we were hardcore. We'd hit each other with nails through the boards, and like you could see Mick Foley grimacing because he had heard that before, and he's just he's feeling it how he felt it, but he did it with professionals and had medical staffs, and he's thinking of every awful tragedy that happened in his name and kidney punctures across the nation. I mean, it was
Patrick Sabo probably getting a concussion by being tombstoned onto a cement floor.
Well, Sabo deserved it.
He's a great guy, great guy. But so, wrestling was so. Oh, this is just bringing back so many memories.
It was great,
I didn't care for Kevin Nash, Big Diesel,
Razor Ramon,
but when they were Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, and they were the Wolfpack NWO, they were the coolest guys on the planet.
See, I hated WCW. I never watched it, but I was WWF loyal.
Were you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, The Rock was really cool. Like, when he finally figured out his character and he became, you know, you smell what The Rock was cooking.
Yep.
That was really awesome. But Stone Cold, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, the WrestleMania match that was like over an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It was like the most epic.
Shawn
Michaels came in from the Anaheim Stadium on a zip line.
I remember watching, you know, the Dudley Boys and going back to Macho Man and Hulk and
Hacksaw Jim Duggan on Sunday mornings with like six people in the audience.
Yes.
No, do you remember the Vince McMahon arc with Stone Cold? Like, like that was like literally like 3 years of basically fucking Stone Cold fucking with Vince McMahon.
It was
everything.
Trump. That's the thing. Trump then came into the WWE with McMahon, and that's still my favorite gif is him just cold cocking Vince. Was it Vince McMahon or was it a referee? It's the GIF where he just straight up tackles him. And I was like, that could be our president someday.
Also, it's called GIF.
He's going to go. No, it's GIF.
It's GIF.
It's a hard J.
So,
like jogging.
So we got to wrap up. What final thoughts for the episode?
No, I'm sorry. I could talk this all night. I could do a wrestling
he had
podcast.
No, he had no beat off stories. But the second we get to wrestling, he's all over. He's coming right now.
There ain't nobody on this podcast that's not going to agree that Stone Cold Steve Austin is the greatest of all time. He's like the fucking Babe Ruth, the fucking throwing chairs and beer in people's
faces. Texas Rattlesnake.
No, my favorite is Mankind, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, he was so creepy.
And Hulk. Man, Hulk.
I bet you got excited when The Undertaker had the role.
You're too young. How old are you?
I'm like 29.
29. I'm 33, so I'm just barely old enough to remember Hulkamania in the early days. It was the shit.
Legion of Doom or bust.
See, like, the Hulk I remember is Hollywood Hogan. Voodoo Child, on the first night I heard Voodoo Child, and he came out on WCW Nitro with Eric Bischoff, I was like, Jimi Hendrix is the greatest singer of all time. You know, like, I didn't even know Jimi Hendrix. Like, I wasn't one of those cool kids that wore bell bottoms and pretended I grew up in the 60s. And so I was like, all right, this guy's pretty good. I can do this because Hollywood Hogan likes him.
What about D-Generation X?
Oh, are you kidding me? X-Pac?
Hated those guys.
The 1-2-3 Kid?
All right, this
and Eddie Gonzalez?
I hated those guys, but I did the suck it a lot. Mm. All the time.
It's like Triple H and those other two dudes.
China.
Oh, well,
China.
Triple H and then Edge. And then the Walls of Jericho, Chris Jericho
was one of the best.
Sting was always in WCW my favorite because he'd just be up in the rafters and the Sting death drop, like literally anyone could do ever, and it would never hurt you.
Do you remember when they brought Goldberg to like fucking spear person, one shot him, just boom, got speared by
my
Goldberg.
Absolute favorite wrestler of all time, Chris Benoit. Greg, so let's wrap
Ric Flair.
Let's wrap up the episode.
The Nature Boy.
Final thoughts of the election.
No, nope. Final thoughts on the election. It certainly feels like Donald Trump has just stalled out.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't do something major or something doesn't stick, some accusation to Hillary doesn't stick within the next, let's see, we got, today's the 29th?
About 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks.
It feels like he's given up, he's gone back to his business, and he's preparing Trump TV. Feels like he's not, I mean, other than saying he's going to put his money in, he's...
Well, he hasn't been, I feel like he needs like some huge burst that he needs to almost wait until there's about 4 days left and she can't recover. And if he can land some huge blow with about 4 days left, that's a national scandal that he'll dominate the airwaves and she won't be able to get access. He can make this thing pretty close. But the fact that they pulled out of Virginia means the election's over. Because you can't win. If he doesn't win a combination of either Pennsylvania and Virginia or Pennsylvania and North Carolina, the election's over.
And he's 5 points down in Pennsylvania by the Real Clear Politics average. So he's probably going to lose Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I do think, though, that the polls in this election are almost... They're kind of good, but like it's like what happened with the Democratic primaries where Hillary would have a 5-point lead and then Bernie would win by 21 points.
I don't think she's as far ahead as people say. I think that there is a lot of people saying they're not going to vote for Trump, and then when they get in there, they will vote for Trump. So I do think it's going to be closer.
People will feel bad about not voting that have been lifelong Republicans and pull the lever.
Yeah, and I do think that there will be a lot of pickup for Gary Johnson because a lot of people will go, oh, there's a third choice. I'm hitting that button. I don't care what he's about.
I think that they're not going to because it's going to be about stopping the other side.
Yeah. So I think it's probably closer, but the media is hell-bent on making sure that Hillary is the next president because she is establishment. You know, I mean, it's not that Donald Trump is anti-establishment. I mean, hell, he's played the game forever. But Hillary Clinton is, you know, besties with everybody at the Council on Foreign Relations, the Brookings, all
that.
She's
literally the global elite that Alex Jones hates.
Absolutely. I do think that it's going to be interesting. And listen, it's not as apocalyptic as we said. James and I were talking about that. You know, Andrew Jackson was killing people. He disobeyed the Supreme Court and wiped out all the Indians. I mean, he was a horrible human being.
He was the Stone Cold Steve Austin of his time.
Right. I mean, we're all going to be fine no matter which side wins the election, and they're going to be a one-term president anyway, so it'll be okay. So, those are my final thoughts. If you're close, if you've made it this far in the election and you're close on Saturday, we're going to be speaking at pro-legalization rally at Bloomington around 4:30 an IU campus.
Remember which is the McNutt quad?
McNutt. I have no idea. We'll post it on WeAreLibertarians.com or on our We Are Libertarians Facebook page. Excuse me. And thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
I'm very tired, yeah.
Good luck to your Braves in the World Series, Greg.
We are the worst team in all of baseball. So,
but you guys are in the World Series.
No, the Cubs versus the Indians.
Right.
The Indians are the other racist team.
Right. The Braves. You got the Indian symbol on your hat.
No, we're the ones that scalp. They're the ones that are more into the feather headdress thing.
Oh, so there's like two.
Remember Major League? They're the Charlie Sheen team.
Oh, okay. You guys are the Atlanta.
Yeah,
ones.
Rob Kendall likes the Cubbies. He's the bandwagon Cubs fan.
Yeah, we need to talk about Rob Kendall. We need to talk to Rob Kendall. He's not doing well.
We need to have a Rob Kendall cast.
Rob is cracking. Okay. Rob is beside himself. Not only are the Cubs, everything's on the line with the Cubs. Trump is losing. They're going to lose the Senate.
Cubs are
going to
win
House.
In six, though.
He's afraid to make a bet for the board.
Let's put this on record, James. You have challenged Rob Kendall to what?
I offered him a $130 condenser mic from Guitar Center. It is celluloid. It is aluminum. It has two different types of jacks if you want to exchange them for like a normal jack. Or if you want to make it a PC jack, you have a USB option.
That's a nice microphone.
It's a very nice condenser mic. It's $130.
That's three times the amount we spent on our
if
mics.
If Trump wins, he gets the condenser mic. And that's actually better than these dynamic mics because he gets a more crystal clear tone.
That's
so he
right.
Can, but he's got, if he loses, if Clinton wins, he owes me his famous board, his $50 board.
His tiny
board,
little
tiny,
board.
Tiny board.
Even among Republicans, I'm just, it's been about a week to 10 days since I've really heard that Trump's going to do this. He's going to pull this thing off. Like, instead, it's more of they're pointing to individual state polls, like with Florida, or they're pointing to, you know, Hillary's crooked. The narrative's changed.
Meanwhile, he should be smoking her in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm going to bronze it. I'm going to bronze it, make it into a chain.
So what has the response? So if Trump, if he's so into his candidate and he's so sure he's going to win like he is, what has his response been to you on this bet?
He's like, I can't do it, James. No, it's worth more because Chris Spangle's got to air his dirty secrets. Is that what it was?
I have no secrets. I just talk in this podcast alone. I talked
about lies. Your lies, Chris.
Well, he says that I'm lying about Trump by saying that he sexually assaulted women, which and he will only take the bet if I apologize for lying about Trump's sexual assault.
Well, that's already losing the bet. If you already apologize, say if Trump wins, you apologize. You go on record, and I don't know.
He said everything's been discredited. How could you say this about Trump? I've said because it hasn't been discredited. Just because your cult leader says it's been discredited, it doesn't mean it's been discredited. The guy's on tape saying that he does it a certain way, and then women, multiple women, come out. It's like saying, well, yeah, you're right, Rob. There isn't physical evidence that Bill Cosby ever raped anybody, but there's 80 women that say he did exactly the same thing in the same pattern as this. Well, Why are they all coming out now? Because of the election? Well, A, because the guy will sue the pants off of anybody. He's already threatening to sue them. And there's strength in numbers. And B, like, Your other argument is that Bill Clinton did the same shit. Jennifer Flowers, Paula Jones, they all came out in the 92
election. Which isn't a counter to it. It's just, right. You know, it's they're bad too. But we know the Clintons are the worst people in America.
Right.
Since he was elected.
Do you think that it's right or wrong? Oh, well, I don't believe it. Okay, if you don't believe it, that's fine. You're more than welcome to believe his story, but I'm not going to apologize for believing women when they say they were sexually assaulted by a man who brags about sexual assault.
No, because you accepted about Bill Clinton.
I totally think Bill Clinton did it. Yeah. I totally think that he's a rapist too.
Right.
I don't think that Donald Trump is a racist. No one has made that claim. But Bill Clinton, that claim has been made, and I could totally see that situation.
Yeah. You know what I'd actually love to see? Gary Johnson has very little time left.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have much time. The momentum seems to be sucked out of the room, especially with Weld going rogue. I'd love to see him announce that they're going to do a press conference together and they're going to endorse one of the other two,
mm-hmm.
and then just give a speech leveling into America saying, what the hell is wrong with you? Like how Trump says that I'm going to do this, and then it turns out it's all of Bill Clinton's women sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, like totally hack the press somehow with a misdirect and do it like in Washington, D.C., do it from the state, you know, from in front of the White House, some very visual, powerful image where the press will cover it and he sits there and instead of giving him what he told he was going to give him, which would, you know, if they were pretending to endorse another side, I think that would get the press there and then deliver a speech about what they believe and why they're the right choice on election day.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, because Gary has been really strong on the Facebook Live videos that I've watched on his page. I saw one the other night and it was super strong. I mean,
is his closing moments in American politics.
And that's why it pisses me off about Weld. This is my final thought. Weld, these are the closing arguments. These are when you tell us why we should vote for you and what you guys will do differently, not why we shouldn't vote for Trump. And that's why people are pissed at you. And we don't have time for your bullshit. So
no one cares that you're scared.
No one cares that you hate. Yeah, no one cares that you hate Trump. We all hate Trump. Even the people who are voting hate Trump. And you are making us
30% of the people that will vote for him on election day will hate him.
Right. I mean, so it's just like, man, is anybody going to the polls happy about their vote?
And that's the thing, is libertarians should be. The majority of Americans should know that Gary Johnson is the guy with the vision, the path forward, and they'll never have to apologize for it or feel bad.
100%.
Instead, it's Donald's so bad. The orange-faced buffoon who's going to beat me by 55 million votes. Like, come on. Sell yourself. Be a leader.
Right. All right, thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians, the episode that just won't quit. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next time, and as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.